is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinkertoys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinkertoys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinkertoys is open daily.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. The UN Secretary General says enough is enough, and Kofi Annan blames both Hezbollah and Israel for the fighting in Lebanon.
I call for an immediate cessation of indiscriminate and disproportionate violence.
Israel's UN Ambassador Dan Gillerman.
We will do whatever is necessary, by whichever means are necessary, in order to incapacitate the Hezbollah.
The airstrikes continued in Beirut in the last few hours and in South Lebanon, where Israel is warning people to flee immediately. But where to? Brenda Barton is with the World Food Program, which is finding it difficult to get to thousands of people.
Roads and key bridges have been blown out. Trucks are being targeted. We have concerns about our aid workers moving around in unmarked vehicles.
The governor of Missouri has sent in the National Guard to help evacuate anyone without electricity who may be in danger because of the continuing heat wave.
Police officers are driving through the streets on loudspeakers urging residents to leave their homes, saying, look, it's going to be too hot over the next few days. You could die.
John Mills of KMOV-TV. Storms last night knocked out power to nearly a half a million homes and businesses in St. Louis.
A lot of people in the city of St. Louis live in brick homes that heat up fast. And with the temperature around 100 degrees, the city's public health director, his word, saying these homes could turn into furnaces.
It's weakening some, but a tropical storm is making its way up the northeast coast with its sights on Massachusetts.
Okay, it'll never amount to hurricane barrel, but they're still battening down the hatches on Cape Cod.
We are pretty much in its path. You know, the storm track plot certainly puts it on target for Cape Cod.
Harbor Master Tom Leach says they weather storms worse than this every winter, but this is different.
We do certainly get storms all the time the winter that are blowing that hard, but we don't have the boats in the water at those times. Anytime we get this kind of a threat, we want to be attentive to it.
Tropical Storm Beryl is the second named storm of the season. Lou Miliano, CBS News.
The Senate has joined the House in voting to extend the Voting Rights Act another 25 years. Earlier today, President Bush made his first speech before the NAACP.
President Bush is used the speech to point to lingering racism in America, telling the NAACP it is easier to change a law than a human heart. He also touched on the GOP's sometimes rocky relations with black voters.
For too long, my party wrote off the African-American vote, and many African-Americans wrote off the Republican Party.
But Mr. Bush won big applause when he told the NAACP he looks forward to signing the Voting Rights Act renewal. Peter Mayer, CBS News, the White House.
On Wall Street today, the Dow finished off 83 points, and the NASDAQ was lower by 41. This is CBS News.
Yeah, my wife's pregnant, so since she's driving more carefully now, maybe we could get a discount on our rate, huh?
That's a real question that was put to the licensed insurance experts at Progressive Direct. When you call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE, we'll answer your questions and help you find the policy that best fits you. So whether your question's unique or typical...
Will I get a discount if I insure both my cars with you?
In fact, she will. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Available in most states and situations.
Found a great summer hotel deal.
Let me guess, your parents' house.
No, Priceline has the top 50 vacation spots, up to 50% off.
Places we actually want to go?
Soho, New York.
Yeah?
The Strip in Vegas.
Ooh.
Waikiki, Hawaii.
Up to 50% off?
When you name your own price. Check out all 50 spots on Priceline.
Oh, I'm guessing your parents' house didn't make the list.
The 50-50 hotel savings event, only on Priceline. More ways to save. Exact hotel shown only after purchase.
This is the 37th anniversary of the day humans first walked on the moon, but as CBS News correspondent Peter King reports, it's also a landmark anniversary for Mars exploration.
Touchdown, we have touchdown.
30 years ago today, NASA's Viking became the first spacecraft to land and send back pictures of the red planet. Mission planning director Gentry Lee.
How do you possibly describe the first photograph that a human being has ever seen from the surface of another planet.
Scientists then thought Mars had always been a dead planet, but NASA's Dr. Dan McLeish says now,
we've discovered that ancient Mars had regions which we call habitable.
Today there are 6 spacecraft on or orbiting Mars, including 2 rovers, which have been exploring for more than 2 years. Peter King, CBS News at the Kennedy Space Center.
A North Carolina judge has tossed out a state law that's been on the books for more than 200 years, a law that says unmarried couples can't live together. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
Hello, my name's Smokey, and I'm a hardcore biker. I'm here to tell you that Geico... Hold on a sec. Is this the right music, bro?
Really?
Anyway, Geico covers most kinds of bikes, so you can get money-saving discounts whether you're a casual weekend rider or a hardcore biker like me.
You see, man, I'm not sure. This music don't make a lick of sense.
For a free rate quote on motorcycle insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could all you car dealers, bankers, and credit card companies switch over to the All Sappy Love Songs All Day Long station? Good. For the rest of you, here's the secret. FreeCreditReport.com. If you know your credit score going in, you may be able to cut a better deal on car loans, refis, even credit cards. And you'll find your free credit score and report at FreeCreditReport.com. That's the secret. Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com. Get the score.
It's another hot summer day on the left coast. I'm Peter B. Collins, and welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. We've got 3 hours to talk about what's going on in our world, and that's not enough, but we'll do our best. We'll kick off the program with our weekly visit from Faz Shakir at the Center for American Progress. He's co-editor of the Daily Progress Report. Coming up in about a half an hour, we're going to talk about, among other things, the terrorist attack in Mumbai, India last week. Rahul Mahajan, a blogger and journalist, will be joining us. Also on our program today, we give you another live update on the developments in the Middle East. Chris Tonsing from the Middle East Report about an hour from now. Then we'll spend the remainder of the next hour with Ron Suskind. His powerful new book pulls back the curtain on a lot of the activities of the Bush administration. It's called The 1% Doctrine. We'll talk about a lot of things related to foreign policy and bring it full circle to the current situation with Iran and Israel, Palestine, etc. Also on our program today, a lighter moment from Richard Rappaport. He's written a piece that identifies the problem in America's media. And it's you know, Natalie Holloway, all these distractomatic stories, the runaway bride, the Duke rape case. And he chalks it all up to what he calls the cracker factor. And he estimates that if CNN moved out of Atlanta, a lot of the news would be very, very different. So we'll have a little fun with that. We'll be taking your calls in the Free Speech Zone, too. It's all ahead here on the PBC Show. You can join us by phone at 831-899-5792. Or toll-free at 888-579-2540. As we mentioned, Faz Shakir is joining us today, and he co-edits the Progress Report. You should get a copy for yourself. It's free in your email every day. Just log on to progressreport.org, one of the many websites of the Center for American Progress. Hello, Faz.
Hey, Peter. How's your Thursday going?
Not too bad so far. Things are coming along okay. I wanted to start off with an item that is buried near the bottom of the Progress Report today, and it may bring in some of your legal expertise. I think some of our listeners know you're on your way to a legal career. You're in law school.
Don't hold it against me.
I won't. It has to do with the unusual action of the House yesterday voting to bar federal courts from ruling on the constitutional validity of the Pledge of Allegiance. And this is an effort to block Michael Newdow from the federal courts on this issue, and maybe others who would like to take up a similar challenge. Isn't this a remarkable way of trying to block what I consider to be legitimate legal proceedings?
Yeah, there's been a raging debate on the blogosphere, particularly in the progressive blogosphere, about this particular act by Congress and whether it's actually something that they can do. I think the consensus is that so far there hasn't been any precedent for this type of action, that nobody could find any case or law being passed that would prohibit courts from taking up certain cases. So the constitutionality of this would be very dubious. I don't think that you can just strip, one branch cannot strip another branch of its power. That inherently violates the checks and balances. But we'll see how it goes from here.
It kind of reminds me of what I view as the downside of minimum mandatory sentence legislation that essentially tells a judge what to do before the facts and issues of a particular case are before that judge.
That's a really good point. Yeah, and it's interesting that the right always talks about how they want small government, but it's not actually, this isn't small government. They'll probably shroud it in claims of being small government. What they really want is their own branded style of government, and they want to dictate that version of government. So if you don't agree with their view, they're just going to stomp you out. They're going to close the doors. They're going to lock you out until you agree with them.
So we don't want activist judges to permit same-sex marriage, but it's okay for an activist judge to, you know, put the thumb on the scale for a presidential election like in 2000.
That's right. A lot of hypocrisy there.
Okay. One of the other issues that is also, you know, swirling in my head related to that is a congressional resolution that has strong bipartisan support that appears to want to change the facts on the ground in the Middle East right now. And that is, in order to avoid a vulnerability by Israel under the Arms Export Control Act, there is a resolution in the House saying that they believe that Israel is operating properly and in a defensive mode consistent with the Arms Export Control Act. I have a little trouble with that, Faz. Number one, I don't think it squares with the facts. And number two, I see Congress essentially taking sides in a conflict like this, and I find that problematic as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I was thinking about this the other day, that generally the politics of the Middle East has really been dominated in this country by what politicians say. And for the first time in a long time, I think we're seeing a changing dynamic a little bit. And I would attribute that a little bit to the blogosphere and also the rising voice of the left, people like yourself coming onto the scene and other radio hosts. And I feel like progressives are gaining a voice where these sorts of acts, whereas in the past would have just flown under the radar, nobody really would have talked about it. It would have been standard operating procedure to kind of just rubber stamp what Israel was doing because it was good politics. Now it's starting to gain a little bit more attention. Even the evacuation from Beirut is now being talked a lot about on the media, I think, because the left is raising it a little bit more, saying, you know, why is this bombing going on? If it's going on, isn't that something we should be concerned about? So I think that the dynamic of the debate is changing a little bit.
And on that note, a listener called the other day, and I kind of jumped on John from Carmel Valley before he finished his thought. But he said that he didn't think the U.S. should be evacuating people from Beirut because he thinks the U.S. should be focused on stopping the Israeli attacks. And at minimum, it does appear that the U.S. could prevail upon our ally Israel, whom we supply $3 billion a year and most of its military materiel, to at least give us a pause in the bombing to get Americans and other internationals out of Beirut before they continue this pummeling.
I mean, I think that's a very central question here. It was asked of Sean McCormick, who's the State Department spokesman, a few times in recent briefings, and he hasn't been able to give a good answer. All he said is, well, we're consulting with the Israeli government. We're hoping that, you know, we're consulting with them. We have liaisons dealing with them. We're trying to seek their assurance that we can get our people out of there. But you're right. I mean, the simple solution here is, can you please just stop bombing so we can, or can you not bomb in these particular areas so that we can assure that our citizens will be guided to safety? But there was an interesting blog post done by somebody on American Prospect where she had gone and talked to the State Department, and they said, or what she learned is that the State Department doesn't really want to talk about this issue because they feel like if they show that the violence is so great in the Middle East that we have to evacuate all our people, it works against them. You know, that it would contribute to this idea that what's going on there is just terrible, and that's not what they want to be talking about.
Faz, I want to ask you a couple of things related to the open microphone in St. Petersburg that captured the president's off-the-cuff interchange with Tony Blair. We'll skip the Merkel back rub and let that one stand on its own. But, you know, in addition to the S word, the S bomb that has now been played on many media outlets who are waiting for the FCC to send them a notice of obscene broadcasting, and we'll send the bill to the White House, it strikes me that that minute-and-a-half exchange is so enlightening about the way this man's mind works or doesn't.
Yeah.
Because in the space of a minute and a half, he talked about eight different things. He was juggling Diet Coke versus Coke, his birthday sweater from Blair. He didn't call him Tony or Mr. or Prime Minister or even, you know, one of his nicknames. It's just Blair.
Yo, Blair, yeah.
And in between it, he's actually talking about some important things of statecraft, about, you know, trying to get Syria to send a message to Hezbollah and getting Kofi Annan to facilitate that. But this guy has a serious lack of focus.
Yeah.
And when you watch the body language of Tony Blair, he seems kind of aghast, like he's a crazy uncle. And, you know, we just got to humor him and see if we can survive till 08.
No, I'm glad you and I see completely eye to eye on this. I mean, he was munching on a piece of bread the whole time. You know,
it was rude.
It was extremely rude. I was actually embarrassed, you know, as a resident of the United States, to be watching my president acting as he was amongst world leaders. And I think you're right that he was juggling all these major issues, but he didn't even seem focused on any one particular one, nor did he seem to have any particular insight that would show that he was on top of what he was talking about. And I thought the most pertinent exchange was Tony Blair kind of asking him, "Will you send me to the Middle East so that I can help to arbitrate the differences that are going on? I can try to help resolve some of the conflict." And President Bush just shot him down. He said, "No, Condi's going to go there. We don't really want your help. Just stop asking." And I thought that, you know, if that, I can't believe that Tony Blair is still our ally, but that's a different issue. But if that's the way he's treating Tony Blair, one of our closest allies, you can imagine why all of the others who aren't fond of President Bush are the way they're being treated.
Well, and who's on first? He's talking to Hu Jintao and saying, "Well, how long does it take you to get home?" And, "Well, Russia's a big country. China's a big country." Yeah, they're big countries. We can all agree on that.
Right.
Holy cow. We've got to take a break. We'll return in just a moment with Faz Shakir. He's from the Progress Report at the Center for American Progress. Next, we'll talk about Bush's first ever presidential speech to the NAACP. If you have a question or comment, join us. 831-899-5792 or toll free 888-579-2540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. For whatever legal advice you need, go to Lawyers on Duty. Whether it's for your estate planning, divorce, custody, probate, or a living trust, Lawyers on Duty has experienced attorneys with realistic fees. There's no need to go anywhere else. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available, knowledgeable, and affordable. Located in the courtyard behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, Monterey. Lawyers on Duty open every weekday 9 to 5. Call Lawyers on Duty 375-5100. 375-5100. Alan Kaplan, owner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, meet Louis Basil of Jamestown Real Estate. And joining Louis will be Ronnie Bramer of New Horizon Real Estate Group of St. Petersburg, Florida. Ronnie and Louis will be sharing some great hot spots to invest in Florida and Louisville, Kentucky. That's this week on Rock Roller Real Estate. Heard every Sunday morning at 10. Listen online at rockrollerrealestate.com. For more information on this show and to be a guest, call 408-892-3376. 408-892-3376.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues at 21 minutes past the hour. As you may know, it was 1 year ago this week that we launched the Peter B. Collins Show on KRXA 540 in Monterey. We've made a lot of new friends, and we've grown into four cities in the West, ready to grow some more. Now, to celebrate our first anniversary, we're giving away a case, 12 bottles, no boxes, of fine Central Coast wine from select vintners in Monterey County and the Santa Cruz Mountains, courtesy of our friends at Monterey Bay Wine Company. If you'd like to enter, just drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. Include your name, address, daytime phone. Make sure you indicate that you're at least 21 years of age so the ABC cops don't come after me. And tell me your most memorable moment of the Peter B. Collins Show over the past year. One entry per person, please. And if you don't have email, just drop it to Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. That's P.O. Box 100, Mill Valley, 94942. We'll hold the drawing and announce the winner on August 1st. We continue with Faz Shakir from the Daily Progress Report at the Center for American Progress in D.C. So, Faz, this is kind of remarkable that Bush finally agreed to speak to the NAACP, but it seems like they gave him the wrong speech because he went over there and talked about vouchers, talked about wooing African Americans into the Republican Party, and he seems to have forgotten that he's no longer campaigning for anything.
Good point. Yeah, we talked about in the progress report today that it's ironic that he's going to speak before a group, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, when, you know, so much of his agenda has not advanced them whatsoever on education, healthcare, poverty, on a whole variety of fronts. The African Americans are lagging far behind than the status that they were at during the Clinton administration, and partly it's because he's never really dedicated himself to that cause. I don't think he particularly believes in it. He doesn't think it's a major issue. That's why he hasn't addressed this group for the past 6 years. So he basically wrought what he sowed.
Now, I haven't heard the whole speech, so I don't want to be unfair to the president. What did he say, and what did he fail to say?
Well, I think one of the parts of the speech that's getting a lot of attention is the fact that he said the Republican Party has not been able to attract African American voters, and he said, "I understand that. You know, we just haven't done a good job of it." But while acknowledging that it was a political problem for his party, I don't think he really got to the reason why African Americans aren't attracted to them. It's because of these policies. I think that they are very much driven by the attitude of the Republican Party. We see the voting rights legislation in the House today being being stopped, really, stonewalled. And these are the sorts of messages that are being sent to the African-American community. You know, we just don't really care about what you care about. And so while President Bush tried to acknowledge that, yes, we have a political problem here, I think he just kind of sidestepped the, what's underlying it.
Did he spend a lot of time talking about New Orleans?
He mentioned New Orleans, but he never mentioned poverty a single time, which I thought was ironic. You can talk about he talked about how much, I think, $120 billion in federal aid that he's given to New Orleans, and he said, you know, this was a, he was following through on his commitments, but never mentioned poverty. I mean, I think that's a central issue of Katrina and a central issue for this nation.
And what about health care? You make a note here that,
yes,
as John Edwards might point out, we have two different health care systems in this country, one for the people who can afford to pay and one for the rest of us.
Yeah, and African Americans suffered almost disproportionately. I think they're 30% of the 40-plus million who lack health insurance in this country. And, it wasn't an issue that he talked about today. He talked about the ownership society. At one point, I thought he almost flubbed in saying that from the beginning of this nation, we have had an ownership society, and I thought I was holding my breath. You know, I was like, oh, you know. But then he recognized that, yeah, African Americans haven't been part of the ownership society. In fact, they've been property early on. So he did acknowledge that, that we have this this kind of dark history. But I don't think he didn't talk about any of these major issues that you're now asking about.
Did he try to use his stem cell veto yesterday to woo religious African Americans?
No, surprisingly, he didn't. He didn't talk about the social issues as much as I thought he might. Nope. I mean, he kind of strayed away from that.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that veto yesterday. One of the remarkable things was is that for all the grandstanding that Karl Rove built around this, he did the veto in private. He decided not to let photographers or media people witness that. And then he used the public signing ceremony in the Rose Garden with a bunch of babies that came from embryos that would have been discarded to take a firm stand against harvesting embryos purely for research, and he signed a bill to that effect. But I don't think it's lost on the 70% of Americans who support stem cell research that this president is way out of step with the public and with science on this issue.
Yeah, well, I mean, we know, we're well familiar with the president's war against science in general, global warming, stem cell, you name it, he's against it. So I thought it was interesting that they didn't let the cameras in. I thought that, I mean, it would be something that presumably he'd want to celebrate. It was his first veto, but they didn't want any pictures of him actually signing the veto. And they also wanted to get this story behind them as fast as they possibly could. So as soon as President Bush vetoed it, they then sent it over to the House, and the House immediately had a vote as to whether they were going to override the veto, and it lost by 50 votes or so. Although it did gain a majority of support in the House, once again, it didn't get the requisite two-thirds that it needed to override the veto.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just trying to you can see that this is very much a political story for the White House. They wanted it to be over with. They didn't want it to bleed into another news cycle.
And the legislation is pretty well dead for this year, this cycle. But do you think that there, in the current composition of the Senate, there are four flippable votes, or have people really, you know, made a kind of moral decision and they can't be moved?
I think that for those, there's a number of the ones who oppose it in the Senate have done so on grounds that I think are very difficult for somebody to move on, and saying that, well, this is a moral issue for me, an ethical and moral and religious issue for me. And I think once you get to that level, and I think it's kind of disingenuous, and we could talk about that, about the fact that these embryos are being discarded. They're not ones that are actually taking any life. So I, as somebody who is religious, I don't see the religious problem here. But if you do take that position, I think it's very difficult. It kind of boxes you in, because now if facts were to change on the ground, I don't see how they could, quote, lose their morals or lose their religion to then flip.
Well, and what I point out to religious people who oppose stem cell research is I've yet to hear of a burial ceremony or a memorial service for an embryo. Fast, thanks for joining us today. Always a pleasure to talk
Thank
with you.
Peter.
Fast Shakir.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey has everything you need, from high-end liquor to the very best in fine wines. It's the real deal. Family owned for over 40 years, John will give you one-on-one personal attention, just like family. Have a special request? Not a problem. Open every day from 9 to 9. Monte Vista Wine and Spirits is located on Soledad Drive in Monte Vista Village, near the Del Monte Center. Look for Doug Huckleberry, who greets you at the door. Monte Vista Wine and Spirits wants you to please drink responsibly.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and fun. I interview authors, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make the Monterey Bay Area such a delicious slice of our tasty planet. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Doesn't your Volvo deserve to be maintained and repaired by the best? Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is locally owned and operated by Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco. Tracy is a factory-trained Volvo service advisor. Mike is a factory-trained and certified Volvo technician with over 17 years of experience servicing and repairing Volvos. Join the many Monterey Bay Volvo owners who only trust Hans Auto Repair to service their Volvos. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside. Call Hans at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
Join R.J. Moyer for his weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Hi, Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary or 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, montereylimos.com. Our corporate transportation program offers competitive rates, we answer the phone 24/7, and you get a real person. And we have the best professional chauffeurs. We cover all the airports, including San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland, and Monterey. We can help plan your company's VIP meeting or employee outing to the ballgame. Let us take the worry and hassle out of your transportation or event. 625-5363 or montereylimos.com.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 33 minutes past the hour. I'm glad you're listening. You can join us with a question or comment at any moment, 831-899-5792 Central Coast, or toll-free at 888-579-2540. Coming next week, we'll unveil a new single toll-free number to call into the Peter B. Collins Show, and it's a zippy one that's easy to remember. The expanded hostilities in the Middle East, we'll cover that coming up. Our daily report from Chris Tonsing of the Middle East Report, and next hour as well, Ron Suskind will join us. He's the one who first told us about the Bush administration's desire to invade Iraq in the book that he co-authored with Paul O'Neill, and his new book is called The 1% Doctrine. It's going to be difficult because I have about 3 hours of questions to ask him, and we have a little less than an hour of his time, but I'm looking forward to talking with Ron Suskind. Now, one of the stories that's been pushed off the front pages and the TV screens in the United States is the grisly terrorist attack in Mumbai, India, on July 11 that killed between 182 and 200 people. 182 is the official count in a story from the Taipei Times today, but the Calgary Sun pegs it at 200, the death count, and about 400 injured. To get some perspective on this, we turn to Rahul Mahajan, who is a blogger and a writer, and he's a guy I've talked with in the past. Rahul, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to be with you again.
Thank you for joining us. And before we dive into the stories about India, I Googled Rahul Mahajan, and it comes up with a link to a guy who's running as the Green Party candidate for the governor of Texas. Is that you?
That was me 4 years ago. I ran in 2002.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you were out there with Kinky Friedman and Scott McClellan's mom trying to defeat Rick Perry right now.
No, once was enough for me.
What was that like, running statewide in Texas? That must have been quite a challenge.
Well, I discovered anew what a very large state Texas is and how incredibly difficult it is to cover it if you're not getting corporate money.
Yeah, and you're not Kinky Friedman.
That's right.
You don't have any records or a colorful past, and to my knowledge, you've never been indicted.
I don't even wear anything colorful.
Really?
Most of the time, yeah.
Yeah? You're intentionally bland? Well, Rahul Mahajan is the former Green Party candidate for governor of Texas. He publishes the blog Empire Notes, and he occasionally teaches at New York University. He's been to Iraq twice, reported from Fallujah during the siege in April 2004. And, Rahul, tell us your thoughts about the Mumbai bombing. It was a carefully orchestrated terrorist attack with 8 separate bombs that were timed to go off and did so within a 10-minute period.
Well, you know, I mean, there two thoughts come to mind, and they sort of, it's hard to know how to sort of put them together. I mean, when this was happening, of course, the first thing one is thinking is, who did this, and what does the kind of attack show? And one thing that's very clear is that this has exactly the same signature as the Madrid attacks in 2004 and the 7/7 attacks in London last year, where you know you've got there's no warning, there's no demands made, you've got multiple simultaneous bombings, and often done in a way it seems to just maximize the carnage, and that might have suggested links with Al-Qaeda, whatever exactly Al-Qaeda is supposed to mean these days. It's obviously highly decentralized, but it is also the fact that India, and particularly Bombay, have seen attacks sort of like this many times before in the last 10 or 15 years. Some of them, one of them in Bombay, actually having an even higher death toll, killing 250 people. That was shortly after major Hindu-Muslim riots in which the police collaborated with Hindus to massacre large numbers of Muslims, and that attack in 1993 was seen as sort of a retaliation for that. So it's you know, that those are sort of the thoughts that run through your head. It's like, first of all, there are extremist groups, in this case Islamists, that already have this kind of agenda and have their grievances and have this way of attacking. On the other hand, I think they really are becoming much more part of this global web of these kinds of things, and they're learning techniques and trading ideas, of course, back and forth with other groups in this sort of international jihadi network.
Rahul, you mentioned appropriately Madrid and London, and I'll just add parenthetically that one of my nephews was on the tube in London and got off 2 stops before one of the stations where the bombing occurred last year, so I have a little bit more than a passing interest in that. But when Madrid and London and some of these other events have occurred, there's a quick reaction to try to frame it around Al-Qaeda. But those who have done so have often come up inaccurate in the long term. And so are we seeing copycats? Are we seeing the work of a network that is more submerged than perhaps we thought? Or is this, in your view, a symptom of the widespread antipathy for the U.S. and the West on the part of Islamic radicals in various parts of the world?
Well, I mean, I think we should start, of course, with the fact that Bombay is not part of the U.S. or the West, although it is often, it's sort of presented, you know, in the press here as India is this, you know, emerging software giant, and sort of the idea being that it's somehow almost good enough to be in the West, if you want to think of it in those terms. But it's really not. It's not a Western target, and there are very clear, long-standing, and serious grievances between the Hindu and Muslim populations in India, and between Muslim populations and the state. In particular, there's the situation in Kashmir, where on the one hand there are Islamist extremist groups that have committed terrorist acts. On the other hand, there has been, especially in the 1990s, just massive state terrorism by the Indian state, and in a pretty brutal military occupation of Kashmir. The death toll from that actually far outweighs, for example, the violence in the last 20 years between Israel and various Arab countries. But it's, and you know, those things existed, they're there, and there have been groups like that respond to this by carrying out these kinds of acts. On the one hand, there's these pre-existing groups, some of them targeting India, some of them like Al-Qaeda targeting the United States and Israel, some of them just targeting Israel. And in the past, before the declaration of this, you know, global war on terrorism with this sort of overarching framework, these groups did their own things. Groups that were focused on targeting the United States were very small in number and also had very few people in their organizations. But the way that things have developed and the way that it's been framed, I think one of the things that's happened is there's an evolving sense among these pre-existing groups that they are part of the same struggle against the West, and I'm sure that some of the people involved in the Bombay bombings did see it as part of that struggle against the West, and connected organically in some way to the 9/11 attacks, even though it sprang from much more immediate, direct concerns of theirs. On the other hand, there's also the fact that given the incredible publicity that has been given to Al-Qaeda, to Bin Laden, and to various others like Zarqawi, you've also got a bunch of kids who were not involved, who were not organized, some of whom were not even particularly religious before the last few years, before they started to get, you know, very angry over the occupation of Iraq, for example. That would be like the kids in Britain who got involved, who are sort of springing up just out of the woodwork and doing copycat bombing. So both of those things are going on, and there's a feeling of general convergence, I think, in tactics, techniques, and ideology.
But not necessarily operational links.
No, there's no...
So Dick Cheney wouldn't be able to find them having a coffee in Prague.
Well, no, in general not. I mean, Al-Qaeda itself made attempts to make some links, especially in Southeast Asia with other groups, but in general it's not very helpful for them to have sort of, you know, one controlling council at the top. That's actually not a good model in terms of trying to carry out these acts and to foil counter-terror efforts.
We're talking with Rahul Mahajan. He blogs at empirenotes.org if you'd like to read his work. And Rahul, this is interesting. The story I referenced from the Taipei Times, published today, July 20, says Indian police yesterday were investigating if the sole unclaimed body from the Mumbai train attacks was a bomber after a little-known group said a member of a 16-strong terror team was killed in the operation. Police have cast doubt on a claim of responsibility by Lakshar E. Kahar, Q-A-H-H-A-R, for the well-planned attacks of July 11th. So do you know anything about Lakshar E. Kahar?
Well, it didn't exist before this. It's one of those things where the attack happened, and then somebody put out something saying, you know, it was Lakshar E. Kahar that did it. Now, sometimes Bin Laden has used this in the past. For example, when the embassy bombings were done in 98, they sort of made up a name that hadn't really existed before and said it was done by that group. In this case, though, the belief is this was just some person, probably a kid, who was just was just doing this and had no connection with the attacks. The chief suspects the Indian government has, and I don't know really, one can't tell how valid are their reasons for suspecting them are Lashkar-e-Taiba, which is a long-standing group of the kind that I described, mm-hmm. and also a group in India, the Students Islamic Movement of India, which has come under government bans numerous times in the past 15 years.
And is that Jaish-e-Mohammed, or is this still a different group?
No, Jaish-e-Mohammed is yet another group. So, mm-hmm. I mean, frankly, when you hear too many of these names being thrown about, then you have to ask yourself, do they really have any evidence?
Yeah, yeah. And the two we mentioned, just to try to clarify for people, because these names probably don't really stick, Jaish-e-Mohammed, or Jaish, is that how you say it?
Jaish.
Jaish-e-Mohammed and Lashkar-e-Taiba are described by the Taipei Times as pro-Pakistan militant groups. And still, we don't have hard evidence to date. Am I correct, Rahul, on who's responsible and what their motives were?
Well, it seems as if we probably don't. I mean, if the Indian government has hard evidence, they have not made it public. So I think it's a little bit up in the air, but several of those groups that are based in Pakistan that have been involved in actions in Kashmir in the past, like Lashkar-e-Taiba, are pretty natural suspects.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a break and return. If you have a question or comment, you can join us now. Central Coast, 831-899-5792. Or you can call me from the North Coast or anywhere else toll-free. 888-579-2540.
It's useless to resist us.
We'll continue in just a moment, and as we mentioned, next hour, Ron Suskind joins us right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows. Sponsored by the Monterey County Vintners and Growers Association's 14th Annual Winemaker Celebration on August 12th from noon until 4 p.m. For more information, go to the web at montereywines.org.
Childhood Matters, the show for parents and everyone who cares about our kids.
This Sunday, we'll be joined by Joe Kelly, the author of Dads and Daughters, How to Inspire, Understand, and Support Your Daughter When She's Growing Up So Fast. I'm Nurse Rona, and I would love to hear from dads who are doing the best they can to understand their daughters.
Childhood Matters, this Sunday morning at 9 on KRXA 540.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a Bible solution. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey. PG.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. 11 minutes away from the hour.
Some stones of the skin and bones of a city without a soul. I went out walking.
That's the late Johnny Cash working with you too. It's called The Wanderer. His voice is just so powerful. We continue our conversation with Rahul Mahajan. Again, his blog is empirenotes.org. And speaking of blogs, Rahul, since the attacks in India, in Mumbai, last week, authorities have silenced internet blogs. And for reasons yet to be articulated, according to the New York Times, the government has directed local internet service providers to block access to a handful of websites that are host to blogs, including blogspot.com. Is your blog available in India right now?
Mine is because I have it hosted as an individual account and not on any of the standard blogging sites like Blogspot. It's kind of a bizarre thing, and I think that part of it has to do with simply the Indian government's relative inexperience in counter-terror operations on the internet, because it is common practice for many governments to shut down jihadi websites. The United States, for example, has done its best to try to keep up with, although it's impossible. You shut down one and another one opens up immediately and things go on as before. But the United States is constantly running after jihadis, shutting down their websites. I guess the Indian government was trying to do the same thing with a number of blogs that they thought were being used in that manner, but apparently they lack the technical tools to just, or maybe there aren't any, I don't know, to just shut down those blogs, and they've ended up, blogspot.com is the biggest blog hosting site. It hosts presumably millions of blogs, and access to all of them is cut off from India. I've seen some of the Indian blogs. People can still post to them, but then they can't read what they've just posted.
Very interesting. Now, another item about India that I think escaped notice by most people, because we were distracted by the July 4th fireworks from North Korea with the Taipodong 2 and other missiles that were launched, India launched a test missile, a couple of days later. And there was zero reaction from the world community. Tell me your thoughts about that, and also the remarkable deal that Bush made with India when he visited the country earlier this year relating to nuclear power and nuclear weapons.
Yeah, well, I mean, Bush made this, it's an incredible step in terms of, I don't at all accept the sort of framework that in which questions like counterproliferation or weapons of mass destruction are talked about here. I mean, I don't see why it is that the United States and China have the right to have nuclear weapons and
Iran. So you don't accept hypocrisy? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
What? I don't accept the hypocrisy of that, but I will say that, and of course India is one of those undeclared nuclear powers.
Right.
I don't accept the hypocrisy of that, but I will say that the way that Bush pushed forward this deal is really, it's just extremely destabilizing. It's definitely not good for India to be going so far down the nuclear path, and that's a decision I wish its own leaders were not so apparently incredibly gung-ho about. But it's also very clear, from the point of view of the United States, it's, among other things, an incredibly clear provocation of China, and it's also a great increase in the risk of security lapses in dealing with fissile material. I mean, there's already enough risks of those in places like Russia. Why dramatically try to increase it with this deal in India? But the result of that is that, India is now apparently George Bush's best friend, even though the current government is actually a left government, not a right government. But it's Bush's best friend, so it can carry out basically missile tests of international scope. It was not quite as long range as the Taipodong 2, but it was a 1,500-mile range missile, and that's fine. That's not a problem at all. North Korea carries out a test, and it's a threat to everyone or every country that it passes under. The United States, of course, has carried out any number of missile tests and actual H-bomb explosions that have got all of us running around with radioactive strontium in our teeth, but that's not a threat. And India apparently, at least for the time being, in a very limited way, gets some of the special status of the United States.
Yeah. One more thing about the Mumbai rush hour train attacks. There is a detail here that was new to me in the article I cited earlier from the Calgary Sun. And it said that the train blast came hours after a series of grenade attacks by Islamic extremists killed 8 people in the main city of India's part of Kashmir. Are you aware of that? Because, like I said, this story published today in Calgary is the first reference to that I've seen.
Yeah, there were some mentions of the attack in Srinagar at the time, especially of course in the Indian press. 8 killed in Srinagar. It was certainly an event worth noting, but of course that level of violence is pretty common there. Still, given the timing, I mean that sort of strengthens the idea that it was one of those groups that is primarily concerned with Kashmir that mm-hmm. carried out this attack.
Yeah, Rahul, we have about 3 minutes remaining, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to comment on the recent developments in the Middle East. I asked you to talk about India, but I know that you follow and blog about a wide range of issues. Without me poisoning your mind or suggesting any point of view, what is your take on the current conflict between Israel, Lebanon, and the Palestinians?
Well, I think that to start with, the genesis of this whole thing was the decision by the United States and Israel jointly, and the U.S. has actually been even more gung-ho about this than Israel, that the Palestinian elections mm-hmm. were no good, were not real democracy because the Palestinians made the wrong choice, and that the results of those elections must be annulled by a massive campaign of coercion and force headed towards regime change. They were essentially starting to starve the Palestinians. I mean, Dov Weisskopf, a former aide of Sharon, said, well, we're not going to starve them, but they are going to have to go on a diet, which is to say they basically cut seriously down on the ability of Palestinians to get anything, to get government services, to get food, to get fuel, and they've been doing that in a rolling and escalating campaign ever since January.
Right.
Then Israel started carrying out significant numbers of attacks, killing Palestinian civilians. Then Hamas responded with this attack on Israeli soldiers, and Israel unleashed this massive offensive in Gaza. Now, it's not clear. Probably Hezbollah chose this time to do this attack because Palestine was under attack, Palestinians were under attack, and obviously nobody else was helping them. But they did cross an international border, which they shouldn't have done. But, you know, the response by Israel is unbelievable. It's not just disproportionate the way that everybody outside of the United States is saying. It's not just massively disproportionate with over 300 people killed. It involves repeated, deliberate targeting of civilian targets. It's basically punishing all Lebanese, not even the Lebanese military, but just all ordinary Lebanese for the actions of Hezbollah.
Yeah, yeah. And how do you see the posture of the United States here?
Well, I think that the subtext that's not being talked about very clearly is that the United States, the Bush administration, is seeing this as the great opportunity. They've wanted to do something against Hezbollah ever since 9/11, and now Israel is providing the perfect proxy force to do it for them, and so they're very content to sit back and let them do that and get into the same sort of militarist fantasy that Israel can completely smash its opponents purely by military force, just the way that they wanted to believe the United States could, and it's probably likely to be as much of a success as the U.S. efforts in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rahul, I want to thank you for joining us today, and again recommend that people read your blog at empirenotes.org, and we'll talk again soon.
Great.
Thank you very much. Coming up next, an update from Chris Tonsing of the Middle East Report and writer Ron Susskind for the remainder of the hour on the...
On Sunday, July 30th at 6:30 p.m., Palestinian Ambassador Afif Safia will speak at the Monterey Institute of International Studies Irvine Auditorium, 499 Pierce Street. The Institute's Graduate School of International Policy Studies and its Conflict Resolution Club, the Peace Coalition for Monterey County, and Citizens for Middle East Peace, a local interfaith alliance, are sponsoring the free talk to be given by the ambassador from Palestine, followed by a benefit reception. For more information, please call 373-1715.
Tom Hartman.
We have given our electoral process, the franchise by which democracy happens, the most vital part of the commons by which we administer the commons, we have privatized it. We have turned it over to private for-profit corporations.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
And they have no damn business telling us how we voted.
The new Radio Free America, Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings, 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Day 9 of the Mideast flare-up.
Tonight, the aerial bombardments beginning again in the suburbs of Beirut.
President Bush faces the NAACP.
I understand that racism still lingers in America.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. As night fell in Lebanon, the bombs began to fall once again. CBS News reporter Kristen Gillespie is there.
Three explosions within minutes here. The Israelis targeting the southern section of Beirut once again. There's smoke coming out, big plumes coming up from the southern section. The area has been evacuated, but still the Israelis continue to target it.
Last night they targeted what was believed to be a Hezbollah command bunker, dropping 23 tons of bombs. But Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah is alive and well. He turned up on TV today. CBS News Chief Foreign Correspondent Lara Logan reports.
The Hezbollah leader's appearance on Lebanese television was another blow for Israel, proof that once again they'd failed to kill him. He defiantly stuck to his initial demand, no return of Israel's soldiers without a prisoner exchange. And he insisted none of his top leaders had been harmed by the massive Israeli airstrike Wednesday night.
Lara Logan reports a very reliable Israeli newspaper says the Israeli troop presence inside Lebanon has increased to several thousand.
The Israeli army wouldn't confer or deny them, but what we know so far is that they are said to be conducting out similar raids that smaller teams have been doing, trying to find tunnels that Hezbollah guerrillas have been using both to store weapons and to attack Israeli forces and launch rockets.
Reportedly, the Israeli military plans to establish a 20-mile buffer zone in South Lebanon. Civilians living within 20 miles of the border have been warned to leave immediately. Now this.
How long will I be in chemotherapy?
What should I ask my doctor?
What are the side effects?
Will I lose my hair?
When will I start to feel better?
What about alternate therapies?
Who can I turn to for help?
If you're facing chemotherapy, it's easy to feel overwhelmed. But now it's easier to find answers in one place. Chemotherapy.com. From different types of treatment to side effects, to the right questions to ask along the way. The answers are at your fingertips at www.chemotherapy.com. Your complete chemotherapy guide.
How hard can it be? You put up a sign, you just wait for the offers to roll in. It becomes a second job.
Getting the house appraised and the comps.
The money that you think you're going to save, you end up losing.
I've bought and sold homes before, and now the first thing I do is call a realtor.
Realtors have the experience to price your home so it can sell for up to 16% more than selling it yourself.
Using a realtor is a smart financial decision.
Get the facts straight about selling your own home. Talk to an agent and be sure to ask if that agent is a realtor, a member of the National Association of Realtors.
It's way too risky to sell your house on your own.
President Bush tried to do some fence mending with African Americans today.
I consider it a tragedy that the party of Abraham Lincoln let go of his historic ties with the African American community.
He made his first appearance before the NAACP. CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer reports.
The White House hopes the speech in a packed Washington convention hall helped break the ice after 5 years of declining invitations for the president to address the nation's oldest civil rights group. Mr. Bush acknowledged rocky relations between Republicans and black voters.
For too long, my party wrote off the African-American vote, and many African-Americans wrote off the Republican Party.
The president and the NAACP have had difficult dealings. Mr. Bush moved to bury the hatchet with a call for Senate approval of a renewed Voting Rights Act. Peter Mayer, CBS News, the White House.
The president knew that vote was a done deal. This afternoon, the Senate voted 98 to nothing to renew the Voting Rights Act. Storms in the Midwest brought only a brief respite from the heat wave, and they added insult to injury by knocking out power.
90,000 homes and businesses in the city of St. Louis are still without electricity, and the mayor is saying it could be up to 5 days before power is restored.
John Mills of CBS television affiliate KMOV reports the National Guard will help evacuate people from sweltering homes and bring them to air-conditioned shelters. St. Louis confirms one heat-related death. Nationwide, the high temperatures are blamed for at least 17 deaths. A tropical storm warning is posted for the Massachusetts coast as Beryl approaches from the south.
Wind gusts will range from potentially gusts up to 60 miles an hour across Nantucket to the coast of Rhode Island and the eastern tip of Connecticut, wind gusts up to around 35 miles per hour.
Bill Simpson of the National Weather Service says the storm is tracking to the northeast. It will not make a direct hit on land. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
The world changes. The economy changes. Your life changes. And as they do, there's something that doesn't change. The commitment we at UBS feel toward each client. A commitment to offer reviews of your portfolio, to assess your financial goals, and to provide solutions that help you manage all the changes. Wealth management from UBS. In a changing world, an unchanging promise we call you and us. Member SIPC.
Guess the number one vacation spot this summer.
The Strip in Vegas?
Nope, it's number 5.
Oh, okay, Disneyland.
Number 18.
Niagara Falls?
38.
How do you know all this?
Priceline's 50-50 hotel savings event. You can book a hotel at one of the top 50 vacation spots, name your own price, and save up to 50% off.
Ah, so what's number one?
You'll just have to go to Priceline and find out.
Priceline, more ways to save. Exact hotel shown only.
It's time for another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm glad you're listening. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to meet Ron Suskind. His powerful new book is The 1% Doctrine. And prior to that, he wrote the book with Paul O'Neill that told us how the Bush administration was intent on invading Iraq from day one. And there's a lot to talk about with Ron Suskind in just a minute or two. But first, our daily update from Chris Tonsing of the Middle East Report. They're online at merip.org. And Chris is keeping us abreast of the fast-breaking events in the Middle East. Good afternoon, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Tell us what's new.
Well, thousands of Israeli troops are operating in the Lebanese south. It appears that the ground incursion that the Israeli Defense Ministry refused to rule out for several days is now well underway, and there have been several clashes between the Israeli army and Hezbollah fighters in South Lebanon. Israeli troops are looking for rocket launching pads and the like to destroy them, and in the process are being engaged by Hezbollah fighters, and there have been certainly casualties on both sides, although Hezbollah has not reported any.
Mm-hmm.
On the diplomatic front, there is increasing international distress voiced by Kofi Annan and also some European chancelleries about the excessive use of force, to use Annan's words, by the Israeli Air Force, and also about the developing humanitarian crisis in the capital of Beirut in Lebanon and perhaps other Lebanese towns where upwards of 500,000 internally displaced people, mostly fleeing from the bombing and the fighting in the south, have come to find some temporary succor.
And in Lebanon right now, there's virtually no place where people can hunker down and say, well, we're safe from Israeli bombs here.
No, traditionally people in Beirut who can afford it and have the means try to take refuge in the mountains for various reasons. But because the roads have been so degraded by the Israeli aerial campaign, it's very difficult to move around, and of course it's very unsafe to move around still with the bombing continuing, although it appears at a less intense pace yesterday evening and today than in previous days.
Mm-hmm.
So, Beirut and much of Lebanon are really under a state of siege.
And has Hezbollah eased up at all, or are they still sending 70 to 100 missiles a day toward Israel?
Hezbollah did send more rockets at Israel earlier today, causing, I think, minimal damage. But, of course, yesterday Hezbollah sent a rocket in the direction of Nazareth, which killed two Palestinian citizens of Israel, two young boys playing in the street.
Yeah. And with the ground incursion, is Israel describing this as short-term or...?
Well, the chief of staff is telling troops that the fighting in the north could go on for an undefined, he says, an extended period of time. That's a direct quote. But the defense minister and Israeli politicians are quick to add that this is not intended to be a prelude to a sort of reoccupation of South Lebanon, a sort of restoration of the security zone that Israel maintained in South Lebanon in the wake of its 1982 invasion targeted at the PLO when the PLO was based in Beirut. So it's hard to say what the long-term intentions are, but certainly Israel is disavowing any intentions to keep its troops there indefinitely. It appears that the Israeli military command has realized the limitations of an air campaign, that they are causing a great deal of harm to the civilian population and the civilian infrastructure, that the international community is beginning to take notice of that, although the United States is still defending Israel at every opportunity, and that a ground campaign is both less likely to bring that kind of international condemnation and perhaps more likely to be militarily effective in finding Hezbollah's supplies of rockets. Of course, a ground campaign also means that Israeli soldiers are going to be killed.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to add that's fresh today, Chris?
I wish there was news to report on the Bush administration's position, but they are maintaining their, I must say, cavalier position of saying that they will start working for a ceasefire when conditions are conducive to that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is despite the mounting evidence that of a growing humanitarian crisis on the ground.
Yeah, great. Chris, thank you very much. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Thank you.
All right, very good. So joining us now is Ron Suskind. His new book is The 1% Doctrine, subtitled Deep Inside America's Pursuit of Its Enemies Since 9/11. His previous book that garnered a lot of attention was The Price of Loyalty, which was co-authored with Paul O'Neill. And it was the book that told us first and foremost that the Bush administration intended to go into Iraq as early as January of 2001 when they took office. Ron Suskind, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yeah, nice to be here, Peter.
My pleasure to talk with you, and I just want to thank you for the work you've done. It's very thorough, and it presents a little problem for a speed reader like me. I tried to buzz through your book, and it really causes me to sit down and read every word. It's fascinating the way you have researched and sourced the information,
mm-hmm.
and you bring a lot of new details, and in fact, you broke quite a bit of news related to the NSA eavesdropping program, among
yep.
other issues
yep.
in this
you know,
book.
There's, it's a bit of a dam break. You know, we've been living on a what you call a need-to-know basis with the administration determining that need for a couple years now, and it's all sort of flowing out, finally.
Let's start off with the title. What's the 1% Doctrine?
Well, Peter, it comes from a meeting. The book is full of meetings, episodes, incidents, some of it quite daunting, frankly. And the vice president is having a meeting in November 2001. CIA is briefing him in the White House, and they tell him something that's quite startling, that Pakistani nuclear scientists had been sitting with bin Laden and Zawahiri just a few weeks before 9/11. This intelligence had just come through. And the vice president sits there. The implications of that, you know, you don't need me to sketch. They're quite harrowing. And he says, we need to think about these low-probability, high-impact events in a new way, a different way. And by the end of the briefing, he has that different way. He says, if there is a 1% chance that WMDs have been given to terrorists, we need to treat it as a certainty. Not in our analysis, he demurs, or the preponderance of evidence, but in our response. At this moment, the vice president essentially liberates the U.S. government from the dictates of evidence, saying, look, frankly, we're not going to have evidence often to guide action. And this defines, of course, much of what we know as the news going forward, Afghanistan, Iraq, the global war on terror. It's the secret core of the U.S. playbook since 9/11, and now the public can debate it fully and frankly now that it's out.
So give us a sense of how you acquired the fly-on-the-wall status in many of these meetings that you cover.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I scrutinized carefully the passages related to the single meeting, what you declared is the final meeting of Brent Scowcroft with Vice President Cheney. And, of course, Scowcroft was a major player in Gulf War One.
Sure.
And very tight with the current president's father. And I imagine that Scowcroft was your sole source for that, but I'm curious.
Well, you know, there are 100-plus sources in the book, and they go right to the very top of the government. I can't be too specific, but, you know, folks who assume that I've bumped into Brent Scowcroft from time to time, I'm not going to say they're very wrong here. Scowcroft and I do know each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are many folks, even inside of the administration at the top level currently, who were helpful in this book. You know, at some point you know so much that they more or less have to engage. And in this case, folks who are not only former administration officials but current were part of the array, and it was a wide array of people.
Mm-hmm.
Who said, let's trust truth. It's going to come out anyhow. Let's make it, you know, whole and clear and accurate.
How steamed is Brent Scowcroft? I mean, his book that he co-authored with H.W. Bush in 1998
yeah.
explicitly showed why we should never have invaded Iraq. And how is it that a president who doesn't read much didn't have somebody read that to him or give him a book review?
This current president is not much of a reader. He relies more than other recent modern presidents on verbal briefings, and that is clear in the book. I show day to day how that works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brent Scowcroft is a leader of the pragmatists. You know, he is a prudent man. He's also often quite forceful, even daring in his view of what ought to be done. He was the guy really who drove that Gulf War in 1991. He encouraged the first President Bush that this must be done, this need be the actions of the United States.
Yeah, he and Thatcher really gave the president
yeah,
backbone.
They really did. Mm-hmm. And Scowcroft, I think, is very much a member of what I would call the reality-based community. That's part of the lexicon now. That comes from a New York Times Magazine piece that I wrote mm-hmm. in October of 2004, right before the election. And
I remember that vividly,
yes. And Brent is reality-based. He's really an heir of guys like George Kennan, who thought very hard about the world as it is and dug deep to come up with right answers. He believes, as others do, I think Colin Powell would be in this group too, that right answers are discoverable
yeah.
based on hard due diligence. And that places him at odds with not only Dick Cheney, but certainly this president.
Let me stop you there, Ron. We've got to go to a break. We'll pick up as we continue in just a moment. If you'd like to talk with Ron Suskind, he's with us this hour. You can call me locally on the Central Coast, 831-899-5792, or toll-free from anywhere in the continental U.S. on 888-579-2540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. For whatever legal advice you need, Go to Lawyers on Duty. Whether it's for your estate planning, divorce, custody, probate, or a living trust, Lawyers on Duty has experienced attorneys with realistic fees. There's no need to go anywhere else. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available, knowledgeable, and affordable. Located in the courtyard behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, Monterey. Lawyers on Duty open every weekday 9 to 5. Call Lawyers on Duty, 375-5100, 375-5100. Alan Kaplan, owner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Post Graduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
KRXA 540 checks your traffic now. 421, we get the latest from Larry Oldson.
Good afternoon, Peter. Pacheco Pass, eastbound 152 at El Toro Ranch. It's a grass fire. About an acre has burned so far in the hills, and it's spreading toward the roadway. Fire department is currently blocking the right lane. CHP has, in fact, issued a sig alert. Once again, this would be east 152 at El Toro Ranch in the Pacheco Pass. Gilroy, south 101 at the 25 interchange. Bales of hay in the right lane. Use some caution there, and if you're heading into Santa Cruz Mountain, south 17, right before the summit, injury crash, a couple of cars got into it in the turnout area there. Test drive the new 07 Audi Q7 SUV. Visit your Bay Area Audi dealers or pay BayAreaAudiDealers.com to see the Audi Q7, newest luxury SUV in the industry. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Larry. We'll check back with you in about a half an hour right here. We continue now with Ron Suskind on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. Hey, hey, we're the Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really
Ron Suskind's new book is called The 1% Doctrine, Deep Inside America's Pursuit of Its Enemies Since 9/11. And if you'd like to talk with him, we'll go to your calls in the next segment here, 831-899-5792 or 888 888- 579-2540. Ron, I had to interrupt you as we were talking about Brent Scowcroft, and you call him one of the realists. It's also important to note that he is an associate, I believe a partner, at Kissinger and Associates, and that's the same place that Paul Bremer, Jerry Bremer, the guy who was the viceroy or the head of the Coalition Provisional Authority, ran Iraq for a year and a half. So why is it that the realists haven't had more influence over the Bush administration, in particular Rumsfeld and Cheney?
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a great debate among the realists, the pragmatic men, I call them, as to what happened mostly to Dick Cheney. The mystery of Cheney. He's not the man that they thought they knew. And is it that they didn't really know Cheney, or is that he changed? That's the question, one or the other. And I think that they still debate it. What's clear is that Cheney is no longer among the pragmatic men, the honest broker. You know, look, the fact is Dick Cheney was someone who arrived in office as vice president and was the object of high expectations. He would be the honest broker, the man guiding the process of due diligence for a president who had almost no foreign policy experience. What you find instead, as I show in the book, I think more clearly than anyone has been able to show up to now, is that for the most part, Cheney has built an architecture, a kind of platform, if you will, in which George Bush can be George Bush and remain president and still be president, indulge his gut, his instinct, be a man of action, but within a framework really designed by the person guiding the global thinking, the global strategies, and that is Dick Cheney. And it's clear as a bell. There are moments in the book where you find important events in which the briefing ends at Dick Cheney's desk. The president knows whatever Cheney decides he ought to know, and not one word more.
Let's take us to February 2003. Colin Powell, Secretary of State at the United Nations.
Saddam Hussein has used these horrific weapons on another country and on his own people.
Colin Powell spoke of thousands of liters of anthrax that were unaccounted for, and he said they're probably hiding it. And then he held up a little vial of white powder, and he said, a couple teaspoonfuls of white powder like this, if launched against American cities, could kill thousands of Americans. If he was truly to reflect the Iraqi capability, he would have held up a bottle of Diet Coke and said the Iraqis produced anthrax that looked like this. It has a shelf life of 3 years.
That's Scott Ritter responding to General Powell's remarks there at the United Nations. Two questions, Ron Suskind. Did General Powell, Colin Powell, ever have a significant standing inside the Bush administration before he labeled it a Cheney-Rumsfeld cabal? And how badly was he damaged by the testimony he gave at the United Nations?
Well, you know, look, I think Powell would agree it was a tragic turn in the life of a public servant that had built and earned, really, enormous credibility. You know, by the time that Powell is giving that presentation to the UN, he is already outside of the innermost circle. You know, what the book shows is that Powell was marginalized much earlier than I think people understand. And by the time he arrives at this moment, essentially, the administration is already freed by virtue of the Cheney doctrine, the 1% rule, the 1% doctrine. There are different names for it inside of the administration. They were already freed from the dictates of evidence. I'm not sure if Powell understood that at that point, because he was not in the innermost circle, as George Tenet was, Andy Card, the vice president, the president, Condoleezza Rice, Scooter Libby, etc. And so when he has this moment, which again is one of a kind of tragic turn, his credibility will now be spent on behalf of selling the war. He doesn't realize that till later. At one point of the book, I have Powell bumping into Scooter Libby, and Libby says, now months after the presentation was made, Powell realizes that much of what he said is false. Libby says something like, well, look, it was like you make a case in court. You were a lawyer arguing for one side. That's the way we viewed it. And Powell's point is, right, a lawyer without opposing counsel. You know, that's not the way it was described to me going in. I think that now history is going to look pretty harshly on that whole episode as to why we went to war and how we sold it. You know, the fact is that wasn't really the reason that we went into Iraq, and the book shows clearly it was a different reason.
And what is that reason? Everybody wants to know.
Well, what's clear from the very start of the administration, in the book, The Price of Loyalty, just a little a caveat on that, Peter, is that O'Neill was the main character of the book, but dozens of people cooperated with that project. It was very much my book, though Paul was the protagonist. Some stuff in it he doesn't even like.
Yeah.
What it shows is that from the start, there was a way of thinking that led us to Iraq. Not only the personal issues with the president saying, you know, he tried to kill my father, but the view is this, is that there has been a historical change in the past decade or so by virtue of the revolution of stored, downloadable information around the globe. What it means is that individuals can carry now the destructive power once reserved for nations. Don Rumsfeld, in a memo that I've used now in several books, talks about how WMDs are carried by civil technology and it can't be stopped. The idea then became, how do we create a kind of global experiment in behavior modification? We can't fight all of the countries who are going to have WMDs soon enough. We need someone we can make an example of,
a demonstration model. Let me stop you there, and we'll talk about the game changer next. That's Bush's phrase. Ron Susskind, our guest, 1% Doctrine, the book. We'll take your calls next. 888-579-2540. I'm Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyet, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Childhood Matters, the show for parents and everyone who cares about our kids.
This Sunday, we'll be joined by Joe Kelly, the author of Dads and Daughters, How to Inspire, Understand, and Support Your Daughter When She's Growing Up So Fast. I'm Nurse Rona, and I would love to hear from dads who are doing the best they can to understand their daughters.
Childhood Matters, this Sunday morning at 9 on KRXA 540.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Tom Hartman.
You go to MerleHaggard.com, the guy who did the song Okie from Muskogee, and right there on his site is him doing a music video of his song where he's saying basically no to the Bushes.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
I'm telling you, when you've lost Merle Haggard, then you know George W. Bush is in serious, serious trouble. When country music fans turn against the president, the most conservative part of America is gone, and they're not going to come back.
Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show with Pulitzer Prize winning writer Ron Suskind. His new book is called The 1% Doctrine. That's a remake of an old Bob Dylan song called God on Our Side. And I played it because I want to ask you, Ron Suskind, to what extent do you believe that George W. Bush, approved the invasion of Iraq, the game changer, as he calls it, and we'll come back to that terminology in a moment, because of some sort of destiny, some message from God, divine inspiration? He's alluded to that in some quarters.
Well, you know, in the New York Times Magazine story I wrote right before the 2004 election, I sort of dubbed the term the first faith-based presidency. It got into the specifics and investigation of how faith drives this sort of preternatural certainty that the president relies upon. The source of it is often hard to deign, but it's something people see. He says, my gut, my instinct, but it's also this view that he is, in his way, a kind of messenger of God and God's will.
Is it Armageddon? Is it the end times? Is it Tim LaHaye, Left Behind?
Well, you know, it's hard to pin that down. I mean, I know that you know, he has lots of influences, and he certainly has many advisors who believe in that kind of end-of-days scenario. It's hard to know what the president believes specifically. You know, he also believes, though, in the kind of primacy of action. You know, action is a good for its own sake, for good reason, bad reason, or no reason. And that game-changer concept you were talking about very much is what drove things in terms of Saddam Hussein. You know, he would be the demonstration model to show everyone the rules of the game had changed. And we'll make an example of him, and others will know not to challenge the U.S. as Saddam had with that sort of temerity. Of course, what we see now, X years later, is that demonstration models are not the province of the U.S. Now Iraq has become a demonstration model as to the limits of U.S. power, its overreach, and maybe us doing things that we will regret soon thereafter.
Ron, when I read the game changer phrase in your book, it caused me to think of PNAC, the Project for a New American Century, and the whole plan to reorganize the Middle East around a long-term American empire.
Yep.
What's your reaction to that?
Well, you know, it's the belief of the new American century crowd, of the neoconservatives, is that U.S. power should be used. If it's not used, what good is it? That we now are the lone superpower in the world, and that means we need to act. And our actions will shape events. We have the courage, as they say, to do what need be done. You know, and that embrace of the exercise of power, the use of force, is really a defining characteristic, maybe the defining characteristic of this presidency and the neoconservative movement that it represents.
Well, and I'll confess that I have a certain timidity about upsetting the balance of terror in the Middle East. And as far as the game change has, you know, goes, we're seeing it now in the second quarter, second half, whatever sports metaphor you want to butcher.
Yep.
But either it is a brilliant strategy, and I will be, eating my shoes in a couple of years, or this is the most effed up foreign policy I've ever seen.
Well, you know, there's a phrase they use, Peter, called constructive instability. And this is one used in the neoconservative community. It's not one they use very often out in public or daylight because it's a troubling phrase. It's a kind of a idea that we will act and we will unleash
forces that we will then, you know, do our best to manage. It will upset the status quo as it now stands, maybe as it has been built for many years. What we're seeing now is exactly that. Look, Iraq at the start, in the first NSC meeting, as I talked about in the Price of Loyalty, they said that's the destabilizing force in the Mideast. In fact, now America is the destabilizing force around the world. Will that instability be constructive or not? Look, the book is still out, but my God, it creates enormous havoc. When you move a ship of state as big as America, 30 or 40 degrees one direction or another, rather than 1 or 2 degrees, which is usually the way U.S. policy works, you create waves, destructive waves, all over the planet.
I agree with your characterization of the degrees involved here, and that really spells out just how radical this administration truly is.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that the reason the prudent men talk about going through a very, very rigorous process of choices and consequences, of due diligence before you act, is especially when you are a nation as powerful as ours, when you move suddenly and dramatically in this way, you often create three problems for everyone that you attempt to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're dealing with that right this minute. It seems like we're multiplying many of our issues, our dilemmas, our conflicts, rather than solving them.
Very well put. Before the break, the last break, we were talking about the true reasons that the Bush administration decided to invade Iraq with limited allied support over the objections of many in the world community. And perhaps you've read Greg Palast's book, where he posits that we weren't actually going in there to get the oil in order to drill it and put it on the market. We're going in there to secure the oil to maintain scarcity so that we could get to $80 a barrel for the rest of the oil that's controlled by multinational companies, many of which have favored George W. Bush with huge campaign contributions.
Well, you know, I don't agree with Greg that it was quite that calculated in terms of the central driving forces. I mean, that might have been a contributing factor, but when it comes down to the moment of action, I think it was this idea to make an example of Saddam Hussein. They thought he'd be the easy mark. Paul Wolfowitz talks about, you know, us being greeted by, you know, with flowers and cheers.
Mm-hmm.
It did not happen. It shows, I think, a lack of clarity, of rigor, of a kind of humility, you know. Look, the United States, look at Harry Truman and his view. We are awesomely powerful. To match that, we need to exercise a kind of humbleness. That's really the match that works, so that you have the rest of the world saying, we're with you of our own free will, not because we've been coerced or bullied. Right now, though, the United States is increasingly viewed as a bully. Folks in polls in Europe fear us more than they fear Iran.
Yep.
That shows how much things have really changed based on the traditions of U.S. policy.
We're talking with Ron Suskind, and thanks for holding, Jay. You're on the air, Jay, in Monterey on the Peter B. Collins Show. Go right ahead.
Hi, Ron. I wanted to ask you what you thought of the ideas that the government had been behind the 9/11 catastrophe and that the election in 2004 was stolen and that there's basically been a kind of silent coup d'etat happened in this country.
All right, Jay, thank you. Go ahead, Ron.
Well, Jay, you know, 9/11 was a time in which there was really a moment, really months of shared purpose around the country. I think there was a kind of shared prayer, if you will, that the president would be capable and up to the moment. And at the start, folks were feeling quite confident about that. I think that as you move forward, however, you see that it was a bit of preparation, certain things that they wanted to do, the expansion of presidential power, you know, new opportunities to be forceful in many realms, both domestic and foreign, preparation meeting opportunity. And those opportunities were seized mightily to really change the balance of power inside of our government, to change the nature of relationships between, let's say, the president and the press.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now we're realizing that, and there's been a lot of catch-up being played by both Congress and the Supreme Court. To try to figure out how do we respond to this new challenge. It is new. It's a new kind of conflict without compromising the democratic principles that really make us unique as a nation in the long history of man.
But I don't feel they asked the second part of that question, Ron. I feel that they were willing to give up a lot of our freedoms, our liberties, our privacy in this desire to, you know, apply maximum force and crush this enemy.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, they felt free to do whatever was necessary, and mm-hmm. frankly, to break the boundaries, to break the dams of the dikes.
The West Coast reference.
Constitutional as to civil liberties, privacy rights. You know, look, the fact is, when your threshold, Peter, is we will act based on a 1% chance, just think about how that severs the connection between evidence and action. Otherwise, not only democracy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're losing your cell phone there for right now, Ron. Hope it'll come back here in just a second. I was going to make a comment that on the West Coast, we have the greaseball head of the Oakland Raiders, Al Davis, whose mantra is just win, baby. And it seems that has infected the Bush administration in a very deep way. Let's call Ron back. And in fact, let's get ready for our break here, and we'll take that early and then return with Ron Suskind when we get him back on the line. 831-899-5792 if you have a question or comment, or toll-free 888-579-2540. And it is our first anniversary. If you'd like to get in the action and try to win a free case of fine Central Coast wine from select vintners in Monterey County in the Santa Cruz Mountains, courtesy of our friends at Monterey Bay Wine Company, drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. Include your name, address, a daytime phone, indicate that you're at least 21 so I don't get popped, and tell me your most memorable moment of the Peter B. Collins Show over the past year. One entry per person, please. That's peter@peterbcollins.com. And if you don't have email, just drop it to me, Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. We'll hold the drawing and announce the winner on August 1st. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, this is Ed Schultz, America's number one progressive talker. Join me every weekday from noon to 3 here on KRXA 540. I'm based in Fargo, North Dakota, and we bring you news and views from the heartland of America. I'm fighting the righties every day on behalf of the working people who've made the nation great. Tell your friends to listen. Give me a call toll-free, 1-877-934-6833. The Ed Schultz Show, noon to 3 on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Politicians may come and go, but for the past 33 years, Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey. Technically proficient, Dr. Turner specializes in listening to every patient's concerns and feelings. And because Dr. Turner cares about you, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112, 831-375-1112, 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner, 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
KRXA 540 with a look at your traffic now, 446, and here's Larry Olson, Metro Traffic.
Good afternoon, Pacheco Pass. We did have a big fire out there, East 152 at El Toro Ranch. Did have a couple of lanes closed because about 1 acre of grass burned. Everything's been reopened, but expect delays on 152 in both directions to head between the Pacheco Pass. Santa Cruz Mountain, South 17 before the summit, injury crash, working there, two cars. The good news is they made it to the turnout area. And the Red Bull U.S. Grand Prix going on this weekend at the Laguna Seca right off Highway 68. And you can expect a lot of motorcycles in the area whizzing by on Highway 68. Coming to Sleep Train today, and you'll sleep free till 2008 on approved credit when you purchase any premium mattress set. Sleep Train is your ticket to a better night's sleep. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks a lot, Larry. We're going to check back with you in about half an hour, and I hope things get better. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 13 minutes in front of the hour, as we continue. You're welcome to call us with a comment or question for Ron Suskind, 831-899-5792, or toll free, 888-579-2540. And that is our official Peter B. theme music for government surveillance. And it's interesting, Ron Suskind's book, The 1% Doctrine, includes quite a bit of information about NSA activities, including the recently revealed information in the New York Times that caused some critics to call for treason charges against its editor, Bill Keller, about the international transfer of funds. Suskind's book talks about Western Union cooperating with the U.S. government. A large data collection firm called First Data was one of the first to come forward and assist in data mining operations. And also in the book, more information about the NSA telephone interception efforts. And it includes assertions that the conversations of Americans to other Americans have been caught up in that dragnet that was attempting to only capture calls that involved at least one foreign party and one presumed to be a terrorist or allied with terrorists. As you heard just before the last break, Ron Suskind's cell phone dropped, and Joe Foreman is trying diligently to get back in touch with him. But in the meantime, I'll keep it here and talk with you. Dave from the Pinnacles joins us. Hello, Dave. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, hi, Peter. The last caller, I felt this question was kind of sidestepped. I think we want a definitive answer on this, on the 911, especially the obvious evidence of the missile attack at the Pentagon and the obvious purposeful demolition of building number 7. Mm-hmm. These questions need to be answered forthright and up front.
I agree, and I was going to follow up. I made a note during the break regarding Jay's question about 9/11 truth, and I was going to ask a more pointed question of Ron. We may get him back on the line, and if so, I'll attempt
cool.
to cover that. But
Thanks a lot, Peter.
I agree with you that it is a very important piece of information. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah,
bye.
Thanks for your call. Here's a very interesting passage from Ron Suskind's book, The 1% Doctrine. He's talking about an Al-Qaeda suspect named Zubaydah, who was near death when he was collected by our government, and they nursed him back to health as quickly as they could so that they could torture him and so they could try to squeeze information out of Zubaydah. And they gave him a little waterboarding. They turned up the stereo to 144 with Ozzy Osbourne or Metallica blasting away 24 hours a day. They used a lot of the torture techniques that we are aware of from Gitmo and Abu Ghraib on this man, Zubaydah. And Suskind writes, he was convinced that that purpose in the fullness of time was to offer some cooperation to his captors, something a dead man couldn't do. And he did cooperate. He gave up one body, Jose Padilla. Padilla, a Brooklyn native, had moved to Chicago as a boy. He eventually drifted to South Florida, where he converted to Islam. He left the United States for Egypt and later was being trained by Mohammed Atef when the Al-Qaeda military leader was killed in Afghanistan, November 2001. Padilla migrated over the border to Faisalabad and talked with Zubaydah about some of his improbable ideas. He wanted to build a small nuclear device and detonate it in America. Padilla was not credible on that score. He was untrained in even the rudiments of such matters, but he was encouraged by Zubaydah to pursue other projects. He was then passed along to a true operational commander to discuss what was possible. The code name for that chief was Mukhtar, Arabic for the brain. The name Mukhtar had popped up many times at the NSA on signal intelligence over the past 2 years, including on some key SIGINT intercepts connected to 9/11. After a bit, Zubaydah said that Mukhtar's real name was Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. This was the biggest break in the interrogation. As for Padilla, it was made clear to Zubaydah that this disclosure would mean nothing unless he was caught. The captive told his interrogators how he could be found, and a few days later, Padilla was spotted in Pakistan. Agents followed him, bound for America. On May 8, Padilla stepped off a plane at O'Hare in Chicago, and FBI agents detained him. On the seventh floor at CIA, most of the participants felt satisfied they'd chosen right in not putting captives like Zubaydah into the U.S. justice system. Imagine him sitting there with a lawyer, John McLaughlin once said at a 5 o'clock meeting in May, where the modest disclosures from Zubaydah were discussed. That would be an utter cop-out. We would never know what we'd missed. On the issue of interrogation, Zubaydah represented a first test with results that could now be reviewed. It seemed as though the FBI and those inside the CIA advocating a gentler model of interrogation might be right. That sort of traditional subtle debriefing seemed to have worked. But as to extreme methods, their worth, their deficits, a counterpoint was offered. Did it work? A DO, that's the CIA Director of Operations Chief, said. Because he was tortured first? That's the problem. Once you go down this road and try everything, it's hard to know what worked. And if we had Ron Suskind here, I would ask him, where is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? And if he indeed was the Mukhtar, the brain behind the 9/11 attacks, then why have we not indicted him? Why didn't we try to take him to one of those phony tribunals at Gitmo? Well, the suspicion is that he was tortured so extensively that we don't think that any of his admissions or any of the evidence developed could be used in a traditional court trial here in the United States. So that remains speculation on my part, and that's what I wanted to ask Ron Suskind about. The other thing I found interesting in the book here is a description of a terrorist weapon called the Mubtakar, M-U-B-T-A-K-K-A-R. It's a delivery system for a widely available combination of chemicals like sodium cyanide, which is used as rat poison, metal cleanser, and hydrogen, which is everywhere. The combination of the two creates hydrogen cyanide, a colorless, highly volatile liquid that is soluble and stable in water, has a faint odor like peach kernels or bitter almonds. When it is turned into gas and inhaled, it's lethal. For years, figuring out how to deliver this combination of chemicals as a gas has been something of a holy grail for terrorists. Ramzi Youssef attempted to release the gas into the ventilation system of the World Trade Center in 1993, couldn't quite manage it. The famous chemical attack by Aum Shinrikyo in the Tokyo subway in March of 1995 used that kind of technique. So that's some of the new information that I picked up from Ron Suskind's book. There's also in here a passage which I had hoped to ask him to describe for us about the meeting where George Tenet reputedly told George Bush, the president, that the WMD evidence against Saddam Hussein in Iraq was a slam dunk. And Suskind takes that apart, and the book doesn't define who his sources were, but he cites people close to Tenet, saying that that phrase was never uttered by Tenet at that meeting with Bush, and that the focus of the meeting was on marketing of the war, not really the specifics of, you know, Bush demanding to know whether there were WMD or not. And that's something we'll have to save for another time. The other thing that I find remarkable in Suskind's book is a sequence of a weekend where Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia made a trip to Crawford, Texas, for his first meeting with George W. Bush. And the Saudis were very unhappy with the U.S. tilt toward Israel and very unhappy with the renewed violence at that time in the occupied Palestinian territories. Abdullah made the trip to Texas and first had a meeting in Houston with Dick Cheney. And then they, I think, helicoptered to Crawford. And, well, maybe not, because Abdullah shows up on a bus. I don't know exactly how they got there. But fast forward to Crawford. And there's a meeting with, you know, all the top cabinet people and Bush and the Saudi counterparts. And after about an hour, Bush invites Abdullah to go for a ride in a pickup truck around the Crawford Ranch. And they come back about an hour later, have lunch, and then Abdullah tries to present some issues for discussion. And he can't understand why Bush, who had been sent a briefing package the week before, had no idea what he was talking about. And as Abdullah made certain requests or proposals or demands, Bush is described as just kind of muttering, mumbling, and trying to get it all over with. And what Susskind reports in the book is that George W. Bush never saw the briefing documents that came from the Saudis. Dick Cheney intercepted them and didn't bother to share them with his boss, the President of the United States. So I'm sorry we lost Ron Susskind on the program this afternoon, but I do recommend his book. It's very well written, fascinating information, The 1% Doctrine, and we're going to see if we can get him back on the show for a return engagement. Coming up next, we'll head into the free speed zone. Your calls and comments are welcome, 831-899-5792, or call me toll-free at 888-579-2540. I'm Peter B. Collins.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. As Israeli tanks shell southern Lebanon, ground troops reportedly have stepped up the effort to root out Hezbollah. An Israeli newspaper says several thousand Israeli troops are now operating inside Lebanon. CBS News reporter Kristen Gillespie in Beirut says this could trigger a dangerous escalation.
There have been hints over the past few days that Israel might be considering a full ground invasion of Lebanon, and Lebanon's defense minister is saying the army will step off the sidelines and join forces with Hezbollah to fight Israel should that happen.
Airstrikes in Beirut's southern suburbs continue. Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah appeared on TV today to show he hadn't been killed in the bombing last night that targeted a suspected Hezbollah command bunker. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan told the Security Council he thinks Israel has gone too far.
While Hezbollah's actions are deplorable, and as I've said, Israel has a right to defend itself, the excessive use of force is to be condemned.
He conceded that a ceasefire will take time. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has tentative plans to visit the Mideast next week. After declining invitations for 5 years, President Bush spoke to the NAACP today. CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer reports.
President Bush has used the speech to point to lingering racism in America, telling the NAACP it is easier to change a law than a human heart. He also touched on the GOP's sometimes rocky relations with black voters.
For too long, my party wrote off the African-American vote, and many African-Americans wrote off the Republican Party.
But Mr. Bush won big applause when he told the NAACP he looks forward to signing the Voting Rights Act renewal. Peter Mayer, CBS News, the White House.
The Senate approved renewal of the Voting Rights Act this afternoon. An unrelenting heat wave coupled with storms that knocked out power to 500,000 homes and businesses have created a crisis situation in the St. Louis area.
Missouri Governor Matt Blunt has signed an executive order declaring a state of emergency for the city of St. Louis He is also ordering the National Guard to come to the city.
John Mills of CBS television affiliate KMOV reports the troops will help clear storm debris and evacuate people from sweltering homes. At least one death in St. Louis is blamed on the triple-digit temperatures. No indictment today for Barry Bonds, but federal prosecutors in San Francisco say it's still possible. As one grand jury's term expires, they say another panel will continue the investigation of Bonds' alleged steroid use with an eye toward possible perjury or tax charges. With federal investigators still on board, the Crown Princess is back at sea, heading for New York to pick up passengers for another cruise. On Tuesday, the ship was forced to return to Port Canaveral, Florida, after it suddenly tilted to one side. People and furnishings were tossed around. There were dozens of injuries. On Wall Street today, the Dow lost 83 points, the Nasdaq down 41. This is CBS News.
I'm here with Sandy from GSK. Sandy, what can anyone do about so many people slipping through the cracks of the health insurance system?
We fill the gaps.
How's that?
Well, I run programs that provide over $1 million worth of medicines to folks in need every day.
What kind of people in need?
Like people who've lost their jobs, people who don't have health insurance, people who can't pay for the medicines they need now.
Sounds like a huge job.
I think it's the best job in the company.
GSK, finding a way forward, one day at a time.
Wake up! It's time for the semi-annual jewelry and watch sale at Overstock.com. If you're looking for a fun fashion statement with some bling or exquisite jewelry by some of the hottest designers, like John Atencio and Damiani, Overstock.com has reduced prices at an additional 15%. Stunning watches by Invicta, Movado, Tag Heuer, and more. Name brands up to 70% off. Don't wait. The sale ends midnight, July 24th. Shop Overstock.com.
What about the zoo animals in this heat wave? WHAS Radio's Michael Clark has the story in Louisville.
While many of the animals are used to the hot, steamy weather, zoo officials aren't taking any chances.
Well, along with their daily routine of being cleaned and fed, we add extra things to them for their diets, too. Frozen popsicles, fruit and popsicles, frozen juice sickles.
Jane Ann Franklin is the supervisor of animal training at the Louisville Zoo and says they've also set up water sprinklers and misters for the animals. And Franklin says animals are typically smarter than humans when it comes to knowing their limits in this scorching weather.
They're a little brighter about it than we are. You know, at noon, most of them are taking a nap and trying to relax.
Michael Clark, CBS News, Louisville.
Less than a year after the ravages of Hurricane Katrina, a Harvard study finds that one in four people on the southern coast would still ignore an evacuation order. They say they don't want to stay in a shelter, they're worried about traffic jams and the danger of traveling in bad weather, and they say they believe their homes would hold up in a storm. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
How long will I be in chemotherapy?
What should I ask my doctor?
What are the side effects?
Will I lose my hair?
When will I start to feel better?
What about alternate therapies?
Who can I turn to for help?
If you're facing chemotherapy, it's easy to feel overwhelmed. But now it's easier to find answers in one place. Chemotherapy.com. From different types of treatment to side effects, to the right questions to ask along the way, the answers are at your fingertips at www.chemotherapy.com. Your complete chemotherapy guide.
Now, how can it be? You put up a sign, you just wait for the offers to roll in. It becomes a second job.
Getting the house appraised and the comps.
The money that you think you're going to save, you end up losing.
I've bought and sold homes before, and now the first thing I do is call a realtor.
Realtors have the experience to price your home so it can sell for up to 16% more than selling it yourself.
Using a realtor is a smart financial decision.
Get the facts straight about selling your own home. Talk to an agent and be sure to ask if that agent is a realtor, a member of the National Association of Realtors.
It's way too risky to sell your house on your own.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the third and final hour of today's Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B., and we modestly call this the Free Speech Zone, where your calls and comments are welcome on any subject, from any point of view, from anywhere within the sound of my voice. 831-899-5792 for the Central Coast, or toll free, 888-579-2540. Yeah, there's a rat in the kitchen. And it's watching the Fox News Channel, or maybe CNN. Following carefully the sordid stories of teenage blonde American females who go to Aruba and don't return. Or runaway brides who check out right before they're supposed to get married. Or trying to make it seem like the Duke rape case was the most important bit of news that was happening at that time. And, of course, it's all something that we can blame on the South. Richard Rappaport's a friend of mine. He's a visiting fellow of some sort at the University of California at Berkeley, a journalist, and a guy with a kind of weird sense of humor. And Richard recently penned a piece about what he calls the cracker factor, and he joins us from Lamont country. He's in Connecticut today. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing okay today. It's real hot in California. How bad is it in Connecticut?
Well, we're getting the tail of the first tropical storm of the season, this thing called Beryl, which is going to hit Cape Cod tomorrow, I guess. So it's like steamy.
Steamy and like humidity is 140%?
It's kind of like the South, actually. Kind of like Georgia.
Well, I want to give you a chance to tell the story here of this fun little piece that you wrote called The Cracker Factor and the remarkable response that you got to it from, somebody related to one of the stories you mentioned.
Well, I mean, I have spent the last large part of my life sort of being criticized, as far as I'm concerned, by people like Senator Bill Frist and Saxby Chambliss and, of course, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson. And it just sort of seemed to me that they had one thing in common, and along with, you know, kind of life-supported spouses and kidnapped children and missing high schoolers and run-amok lacrosse teams, which was that they all came from the Old South,
mm-hmm.
which I thought we had sort of put an end to in 1865, but I guess I was wrong, you know. Somehow along the way, I think we lost the Civil War, and I mean us Yankees, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we're being dictated to, and some of the stuff is just fairly hard to explain, you know.
So give us a couple of examples. We got Natalie Holloway.
Well, you've got kind of, you know, they don't need a last name anymore because of people like Nancy Grace, you know, those bottom feeder, I guess you'd call it kind of bottom feeder journaltainment. I don't know what else to call it, but now you have Jennifer, you have Terry, and you have Natalie. And we all know who they are.
Right.
We don't need last names. It's kind of, you know, staple on early evening television. And they, too, are all from the South.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would you, you know, maybe one thing I thought of was maybe it was that CNN is in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that you know, you think locally and you cast your net that way. But I don't think it's that easy.
Well, Fox is the one that really made the biggest deal out of Natalie Holloway. Greta Van Facelift is what I like to call Greta Van Susteren. She got her facelift to celebrate when she moved from CNN over to Fox. And
it didn't take, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, she just panders to the fuzz and wuzz all the time. That show is simply a police blotter kind of program where they review the most salacious crime available nationwide of the day, and then they sit in judgment of it, blithely not worrying about, you know, tainting a jury pool or denying the rights to a defendant.
Well, I mean, I guess it makes good television, particularly when you've got miles of video of, you know, cheerleaders and prom queens and things like that. I mean, they tend not to be anything but kind of white and cute. I guess you could probably say the same thing on the other side of the Duke lacrosse team.
Right.
But anyway, it's all kind of out of this, you know, Georgia jubilee of self-righteousness, you know? I mean, because when these things happen, the assistant pastor takes over press duties, and it just becomes a whole ritual in America. And, but again, it seemed to come out of the South. So what I was hoping was that when you have somebody like Jennifer Wilbank, the runaway bride, she looked, I mean, you know, Jennifer is an odd girl, let's face it. You know, when you look at those eyes, it's pretty clear that something weird's going on there. But, you know, if somebody wants to be out of the Deep South that badly, I think they should be allowed to.
You mean, and we should have given her a prize package? Keep running.
Well, I thought what should happen is that Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, should give her something like political asylum.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe we could call it social asylum. How's that?
So at some risk to yourself, because you distributed this Cracker Factor article to a couple of websites that are presumably available south of the Mason-Dixon line, and you risked the wrath of rednecks and their female counterparts,
And you got a very interesting response. Tell us about it.
Well, speaking about Mason-Dixon, the Mrs. Mason, who is the mother of the runaway bride's groom, got a hold of this thing in about half an hour. I mean, it was, you know, almost before it was out, it was responded to.
Uh-huh.
Telling me that I had gotten it wrong, that it wasn't the South, and it wasn't her son, and it wasn't the Peachtree Baptist Church or Gwinnett County, Georgia. It was more like her, and that she was kind of a strange girl. And if I wanted to call her, she would explain it all to me.
Okay, so did you call her?
I am saving that up. I figured I'd get as far away from the South as I could. I'm going to be in the Middle East in a couple days, and I thought maybe I'd call from there.
Oh, so you're going to wait to call her from Bahrain?
You bet. From the Middle East to the Deep South.
Well, when you do reach her, please, you know, don't call me Colette from Bahrain, because I can't afford it. But do get in touch maybe when you're back in the country and tell us what her reaction was, because it is remarkable when you write a piece like that, you never expect that somebody who is directly connected to the saga that you're writing about is actually going to read it and then email you and say, I want to tell you more.
Well, it's a new world out there. And, I mean, something about kind of the Internet makes communications really easy. And I've been getting a couple responses in every day, some of them telling me to go to hell. Sounds like an invitation to Georgia, frankly. But some people have written very nice, you know, people who live outside of Atlanta who are good liberal Democrats and, you know, kind of really hard road to hoe over the years. So there's some good people in the South. I mean, I'm not, this is not completely blanket condemnation.
I do understand.
Mostly blanket condemnation.
Yeah, it's a sweeping generalization, but it has a few exceptions. Is that fair?
Well, that's for sure.
Okay.
But those are great exceptions. You know, I mean, there's some wonderful people who've come out of the South.
Now, Richard, let me take advantage of your current location there in the Northeast in Connecticut. Interesting survey published today shows that Ned Lamont has pulled ahead of Joe Lieberman. Just a month ago, Lieberman was ahead by 15 points, 55 to 40. And in the most recent poll, Lamont is ahead of the margin of error. He's 51-47. That's got to be really causing Joe Lieberman to quake in his little boots.
Well, I think Joe Lieberman smells of defeat. You just feel that here. You know, you drive around West Hartford, where I am today, and you see, you know, 5 or 10 times as many Lamont signs as Lieberman signs. And I think he is, in a lot of respects, reaping what he sowed in terms of being a careerist in a time when voters are looking for something more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Lamont appeals to that. Remember, you know, Eugene McCarthy did very well in 68, and Connecticut's always been a fairly progressive place, at least since I was a kid. I mean, I guess the Republicans ran it once upon a time.
Right.
But
we understand that Bill Clinton is on his way into the state to campaign on Lieberman's behalf. Do you think at this point it's simply too late that he's dead in the water?
Well, what I am most afraid of, I have to tell you, as a good Democrat, is that he's going to lose. I think he will lose. I mean, you really feel that. You know, Lamont's kind of got him checked in a lot of ways. But in the same way he ran when he was Al Gore's vice presidential nominee, he did not get out of the Connecticut race for Senate. So he actually, you know, kind of hedged his bets on that one.
Yeah, he did a twofer.
Right. And so it looks like he's going to pull that stunt again if Lamont wins, that Lieberman's going to run as an independent, which could have some pretty bad effects, actually, on some congressional candidates here
mm-hmm.
who, you know, and there are three Republican seats in Connecticut that could go either way.
Right.
And if the Democrats won all three of them, I would bet you anything that the Democrats take the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
But Lieberman could stop that. So this is kind of nail-biting time. You know, what do you... Be careful what you want. You just might get it, you know?
Yeah, very interesting. Richard, thanks for the live report from Connecticut. Thanks for taking on the crackers.
And, my pleasure.
You have a great trip to Bahrain, and hope it's safe and interesting, and check in with us when you get back.
I'll do that. Thanks, Peter.
All right, that's Richard Rappaport. Coming up next, we go to the phones. If you have a question, a comment, something that you're just dying to get off your chest, let's do it. It's the Free Speech Zone for the rest of this hour. Lines are open right now, 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, or toll-free at 888-579-2540. Is Joe Lieberman toast? Let's talk about it, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I'm Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary or 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, meet Louis Basil of Jamestown Real Estate. And joining Louis will be Ronnie Bramer of New Horizon Real Estate Group of St. Petersburg, Florida. Ronnie and Louis will be sharing some great hot spots to invest in Florida and Louisville, Kentucky. That's this week on Rock Roller Real Estate. Heard every Sunday morning at 10. Listen online at rockrollerrealestate.com. For more information on this show and to be a guest, call 408-892-3376. 408-892-3376.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
KRXA 540 looks at the traffic situation right now. It's 20 after 5. Here's Larry Olson.
Hecker Pass still have a stalled Big Rig East. Make that Highway 152 east of Casterly Road. It's a Big Rig partially blocking a lane here. Carmel Highway 1 at South Carmel Hills Drive. An accident. 3 to 4 cars involved here. They're now all in the center divider. Once again, that's Carmel Highway 1 at South Carmel Hills Drive. 3 to 4 car accident in the center divider. Both directions to 68. You could see higher than normal conditions with the with an increase in motorcycles, that is, because of the big motorcycle race that will be taking place later this weekend at Laguna Seca. You don't need different pain relievers for different pains. Wherever you hurt, Advil works. Advil, the every pain reliever. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Larry. We'll check back with you one more time about a half hour from now. Twenty-one minutes past the hour. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. That makes me Peter B. Glad we got that figured out. My lines are open for you. In fact, there are four lines available at this very moment. You can call us and get on the air and express yourself. 831-899-5792 or 888-579-2540. Toll free. And just before the break, we were talking with Richard Rappaport. I thought it'd be nice to lighten things up a little bit after some of the very serious topics of life and death that we've been discussing today. But the case of Joe Lieberman versus Ned Lamont is really fascinating me. We've had the opportunity to talk with Ned Lamont 3 or 4 times on this program, and when I was in Washington just about a month ago, had the chance to meet him and chat with him for a few minutes at a reception. I'm very impressed, and I think it is an important signal.
to the rest of the Senate Democrats, some of whom vote with Republicans far too often, that they could be vulnerable if they operate like Lieberman has. And as we mentioned, the current polling shows Lamont has pulled ahead 51-47 in the Democratic primary, and that's coming up August 6th, I think, so we're just a couple of weeks away. New York Times reports today that Joe Lieberman is getting money from groups who typically donate almost exclusively to Republicans, like the Associated General Contractors of America. They wrote a check for $4,000 to Joe Lieberman, and the money was just a sliver of the $260,000 that he has collected from political action committees since March. But that donation and others have fed a perception stoked by the Lamont campaign and its supporters on the web that Mr. Lieberman is too cozy with Republicans, and he is drawing financial support from interest groups that typically gravitate to incumbents. So this is turning into a very interesting race. I think it is a bellwether race that is going to set the tone for Democratic candidacies in the future. So if you'd like to comment on that, I'd like to hear from you. 831-899-5792 or toll-free 888-579-2540. Now, we mentioned this yesterday because I didn't have enough information. I had heard a radio news report about it. But now it's here in print. The House voted yesterday 260 to 167 to protect the Pledge of Allegiance from federal judges. This is such a misguided effort. It really, really angers me. Now, the Supreme Court ruled in the case of Michael Newdow that the pledge was unconstitutional because it includes the phrase "under God" when it is recited in public schools. Supreme Court reversed the case by not ruling on the issue, but basically by saying that Newdow lacked legal standing. So he's working on his standing, his sitting, and maybe even his kneeling, but he'll be back in front of the court very soon. And we have Republicans who have pushed through this legislation that would prevent the federal courts from reviewing a case like Michael Newdow's. And this is really, it's inimical to American standards of justice and fair play, and it just shows that we have some people who believe that the United States is or should be a Christian nation, and that they have the right to re-rig the laws in our justice system to prevent a case that they don't want the outcome of they want to prevent it from being presented in the first place. And I'm sorry, it is wrong, wrong, wrong. Ben and Salinas, thanks for your call. You're on the air on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Good afternoon, sir. This, if we don't change and fix our Congress, we're going to be sold into slavery. They're letting these concentration camps be built. They're paying for it with our tax dollars. They're literally Lieberman and McCain. These people got to go. And what's up with Hillary?
Yeah, well, that could take an hour.
Okay. And
Ben, I want to mention that in the next segment, because it's across the room,
I have
an interesting article about the detention centers that we've talked about, that you brought up on this program before.
Yes, sir.
So I'll give you more details on that, but I don't have
any looking
at my fingertips
forward to it
right now.
Okay, now what I want to say is this: is why is it that where is the anger of what's being done to us? And another thing. How did we get stuck with Bush? Now, in November of the year 2000, when the election took place under Reno and Clinton, isn't it under the jurisdiction of the Attorney General then, who was Janet Reno, to regulate and see to it that the laws are followed? In other words, I'm saying we got Bush because of Clinton and Janet Reno not following through. They were still in power.
Well, but understand that the way Jim Baker and John Bolton and the other cronies of the
There's
Bush administration,
in,
including Sam Alito,
yes, sir.
The way that they operated was to prevent the Clinton administration from gaining any jurisdiction over the issue. And so properly, even though Janet Reno was a citizen of Florida, as the federal attorney general, she had no standing to intervene in the state-level issues that rose up through the Florida Supreme Court and then were appealed to the federal Supreme Court. So there really was, in my view, and I'm not a lawyer schooled in all this, but from what I know, Ben, there wasn't an opportunity for her to insert the Justice Department in those proceedings.
She didn't have any trouble with Ellie and Gonzalez.
Amen.
Those same black Suburbans should have been used to haul those people out of the Tallahassee building there when they were breaking the voting rights law. It is a federal offense to interfere with a person's voting. That was the law then and now. It's against the law. If somebody's going to vote at a federal election and you and I pull them in the car and stop them from voting, not only is it kidnapping, it's a violation of the Voting Rights Act, which is a felony, sir.
Hmm.
And yet no heads have rolled.
The Senate just renewed the Voting Rights Act
because
the president is really looking forward to signing it.
Yeah, you know
that.
Ben,
I got 20 seconds. A final comment?
Thank you. No, I just say thank you for being there, Peter.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Always good to talk with you. And we'll take more of your calls here in just a moment. Get on the line at 831-899-5792 or toll-free 888-579-2540. In the next segment, I'll read you an entry in the Peter B. Collins Anniversary Case of Wine giveaway. And if you'd like to participate, we'll give you the details right after the break here. Lines available. Let's talk. 831-899-5792. Toll free. 888-579-2540. You can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. And we'll continue in just a moment right here.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat the path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Hello, this is Al Moore with More Imported Cars in Monterey, where we feature quality pre-owned motor cars. It has been said that the world's best automobiles are manufactured within sight of the Alps. They include Mercedes-Benz, BMWs, and Porsches. These are the marks of dreams, and they're the manufacturers we specialize in. Some of our European autos start as low as $21,000 and experience very little depreciation. In fact, many of our Porsches actually increase in value, and our Porsches and other German autos have surprisingly good gas mileage too. Many of our autos are covered under manufacturer's warranty or are available with short or long-term service agreements. We also can arrange financing, and we do accept trades.
Drop by More Imported Cars, 999 Del Monte Avenue in Monterey, or browse to moreimports.com. That's M-O-H-R, imports.com. Call Al Moore at 831-373-3131.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for Tasty News shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
I keep pressing this button, and it's just not responding. I'm having a little trouble with my electronic wireless mouse. There it is. On the eighth click, the mouse delivered. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can tell it's live and unrehearsed, not some automated robot radio show. Yes, glitches and all, we bring it to you live. My lines are open for you in the free speed zone, 831-899-5792. Toll free at 888-579-2540. The Peter B. Collins Show is ably produced by Matt Renner, and Joe Foreman is at the controls today. At least there's no speed limit on the road to hell, you know. And yes, we are delighted to be observing our first anniversary of this rendition of the Peter B. Collins Show. It was a year ago this week that we got started on KRXA 540 in Monterey. We are gratified today. They released the new ratings for, April, May, and June. We about doubled our audience. And well ahead of the only nominally progressive competitor in the Monterey area. And I thank our listeners for your support and for spreading the word about KRXA 540 and the Peter B. Collins Show. It is really rewarding to see this take off because, as you know, it's not just a business operation. Hal Ginsberg and I are very committed to progressive media and trying to bring change to our country by changing the media. And we've worked hard, been a lot of sweat, a lot of grit, some tough times, a few setbacks over the past year, but it's all been worth it. And I want to thank those of you who have made this possible and who have supported us from day one. And I have cobbled together a case of Central Coast wine from select vintners in Monterey County in the Santa Cruz Mountains, courtesy of our friends at Monterey Bay Wine Company. And this could be yours if you send me an email that includes your name, address, a daytime phone, and just assert that you're 21 so that I can reduce my risk of ending up in the slammer for sending you some wine. And as you're sending me the email, tell me your most memorable moment on the Peter B. Collins Show over the past year. One entry per person, please. And if you don't have email, you can mail it in the old-fashioned blue box. Have the federal authorities deliver it to me. Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. That's P.O. Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. We'll hold the drawing and announce the winner on August 1st. The email address is peter@peterbcollins.com or humblehost@peterbcollins.com. Either one of those will work. And I'll be delighted to get your entry. Here's one of them. It came in from Franklin. He says, first of all, the case of wine sounds good, Peter, but more importantly, the service to an awakening public that you, Hal, and the others at KRXA have done in providing a progressive talk radio voice in a progressive area is just fabulous. I've called your show four times, once when the very able Peter Werby was host, and of course with you. I guess my favorite, which is difficult to pick, as most of your guests are great, my favorite interview was the first time you had Ray McGovern on. Ray was one of the first people to come forward in exposing the Bush Republican crime family, there's a Mike Malloy fan, on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! About 3 years ago or so. Congratulations on your first anniversary, and may your audience grow and the station profit from the advertisers. That's Franklin Lambert. Thank you, Franklin. And you are entered in the drawing, and somebody's going to win that case of wine coming up on August 1st. Back to your phone calls now, and there are lines available, so don't be shy. Join us, 888-579-2540, toll free. Here's John in Carmel Valley. Hi, John.
A couple of weeks ago, Lionel, who has that 7 to 10 segment.
Really? I thought Lionel was a train set.
Well, he sometimes has some interesting comments, and he had a... he had referred to an article, which I believe was in Time magazine back in 2000, and it had people like Brent Scowcroft and Colin Powell and Bush Sr. and a couple of other key figures from that earlier era, and they were all arguing quite persuasively and even passionately for why they felt they were right in not taking Saddam out right at the end of the 91 Gulf War. And Lionel said ably that they were arguments that sounded right out of the left arsenal of key arguments against the whole Iraq fiasco that you hear right now. And I couldn't have agreed more. It was very interesting. I'd like to get a hold of that article. If anybody knows about it for sure, please call in and confirm that it was in Time of 2000, somewhere around in there.
Okay.
Do you know of it?
You know, a long time ago I used to subscribe to Time magazine, and they got so peopled out that I gave up. You know, they're co-owned by Time Warner, People magazine, and Time, I just felt it damaged its credibility with a lot of breezy kind of personality reporting. So I'm sorry, I don't read Time, and I did not see that. You might try logging on to their archives at time.com and see if they make it available. But, John, what you're referring to, the gist of it, we were talking earlier today with Ron Suskind.
Yeah, I heard that.
Because he referenced Scowcroft, and there was a book published in 98, under the authorship of Scowcroft and George Herbert Walker Bush, which was their explanation for why they didn't go to Baghdad in 92 or 93. And it really is stunning because they said, well, you know, we didn't want to unleash a sectarian civil war. And now we argue over whether there's a civil war. We know it's sectarian. An average of 50 to 70 people are dying every day in the crossfire in Iraq. There is ethnic cleansing going on, and it's just remarkable how Bush managed to ignore all that. And what Suskind points out in the book, and I do recommend it to you, it's a great read and a lot of new information about things that you've heard discussed on this program and elsewhere. He tackles the issue of... let me think where I was there. I just lost my train of thought, John. Help me out. Where were we?
We're just talking about the whole era. Well, the Suskind idea.
Oh, yeah, the Scowcroft. That's what
it was. Excuse me.
You know, he talked about that and described Scowcroft, and let's be fair about who this guy is. He's a partner of Henry Kissinger, along with Jerry Bremer in Kissinger and Associates. These are really hardliners, okay?
Kissinger in particular.
You bet. He's, you know, I mean, he's a guy who is accused of various types of war crimes over the years, and I think he has earned that status. So these are not people who are softies, peaceniks, or doves in any way, shape, or form. They simply thought that this is the wrong war at the wrong time for the wrong reasons. And gosh, you know, we can expect that Bush wouldn't listen to me or to you or to the 10 million people worldwide who took to the streets to try to express their opposition to our intention to invade Iraq. But to ignore his own daddy, the daddy who he claims, you know, he had to avenge Saddam's attempt to kill?
Well, he was playing the upstart. He must have thought way back in that 91 war, I know better than my daddy. Which, if that was popping around in his head, you can see how he could have, at the first opportunity, even not wait for a 9/11, try to rectify what he thought was some great error on the part of his father. But what does his father think? I mean, he must think, what's this son of mine up to, for heaven's sake?
Well, from what we know, they don't talk much. And you would think, you know, and my dad's no longer living, but I'll tell you, if he knew something or had greater knowledge about a topic than I did, I would never hesitate to ask my dad, you know, hey, what do you think about this? But it's pretty clear, again, from Susskind's book that W and his daddy don't really talk. And when they do, they don't talk about significant issues. Bush Sr. has had to work through surrogates like Scowcroft and others to try to get messages to his own son. Now, what we don't know are the conversations that occur between Barbara Bush and her little boy.
Do you remember those 50-odd people that signed a statement and had an ad in at least the New York Times prior to the 2004 election? Some of them were ex-Bush Sr. Officials who were very much against the reelection of Bush Jr. because they were affronted and afraid of his preemptive strike doctrine and other such things.
Mm-hmm.
And that, among so many, including God knows how many other attempts that looked like they might help the defeat of Bush, none of that seem to have any effect. It's one of those continuing huge enigmas as to what keeps this hugely, what would seem, a very sinking ship afloat of Bush's. I find it continually exasperating, and Bush and company must find it elating.
I agree with you on both counts. It
unfortunately, I hate to admit that, but it must be the case.
Yeah. No, it is amazing to see how they have survived so many different episodes. And just to mention one case, the NSA spying programs are explicitly illegal. And the president is compounding his vulnerability by allowing Alberto Gonzalez to testify on the Hill the other day that there will be no investigation, as was proposed. It's the office, I don't have in front of me, but Office of Standards or something, that has done very sensitive investigations in the past. Here it is, Office of Professional Responsibility at the Justice Department. So these people work for Gonzalez, and he instructed them to investigate the NSA spying program, and they came back to him and said, well, we would, but we need security clearances in order to obtain this information. Well, Gonzalez said there's only one guy who could grant or deny the security clearances, and it's George W. Bush. So he has denied access to the investigators who want to investigate him for breaking the law, as he has admitted. And to me, this is just compounding that era. And then we have to ask, well, gosh, where are the Democrats? And that's a pretty ugly question these days. John, thanks a lot for your call. 45 minutes past the hour. More of your calls coming up next. It's the Free Speech Zone. Don't be shy. 831-899-5792. Come on forward if you're a first-time caller. I'll be gentle with you, at least at first. 888-579-2540. Toll-free. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyer, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, Riley!
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, Coach, you can strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show every morning from 9 to 10, only on KRXA 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills.
Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school. When you can work with an attorney with significant life experience, who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
KRXA 540 takes one more look at traffic on the ride home this afternoon. Here's Larry Olson, Metro Traffic.
We do have a new crash in Santa Cruz southbound 17 before Ocean. And no details to really give to you at this particular point, other than to say it's south 17 right before Ocean. Do have some construction in Santa Cruz, northbound Highway 1 at Emmeline. Road work, the off-ramp closed until December. And be careful tonight in Aptos, Highway 1 between Rio Del Mar and Freedom Boulevard. Nighttime road work, the left lane will be closed in both directions, and you could see some delays there. Test drive the new 07 Audi Q7 SUV. Visit your Bay Area Audi dealer or BayAreaAudiDealers.com to see the Audi Q7, the newest luxury SUV in the industry. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks a lot, Larry. We'll check back with you tomorrow. And the Reverend Barry Lynn has Culture Shocks coming up right after 6 tonight here on KRXA. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Moss, Franks, Yens, and Pounds. I rock the chopped up sounds from Devonshire Downs. Out the four of the road, up top in the boogie. I be loyal to my peeps like who the stud doogie. Never bearing bad news, paying crazy dudes. I'm blowing out crews and taming mad shoes. That's a little music from Everlast. And that is our theme song for Dollar Bill Jefferson. Now, he is the Democratic congressman from Louisiana who was found with $95,000 in marked bills, marked by the FBI, in his freezer. And now a little bit more is coming out on the story, because it's believed, when you just look at the circumstantial evidence, that Mr. Jefferson was in the middle of a bribe. But in a statement made available by his Washington lawyers, the vice president of Nigeria has angrily denied that he accepted bribes or had a business relationship with Dollar Bill Jefferson of Louisiana. He says that Jefferson never suggested in any way providing any personal economic benefits to him. Mr. Abu Bakar said he had no relationship with Jefferson, personal or private, other than the usual diplomatic courtesies extended to an American official promoting development in Nigeria. There is nothing linking the vice president with Congressman Jefferson except Mr. Jefferson's own false, self-serving statements. So this one's going to get really messy. And I just think that as a public service, I should hold the cash in the meantime. I mean, I might collect a little interest or something, but I'll leave the principle intact. Back to your calls we go. Michael's on the line, on line two. Hello, Michael. Where are you calling from? Michael dropped. Okay. So Michael's not there. All right. Well, let's dive into this Dollar Bill Jefferson story a little bit more. And if you'd like to join me, I'd like to hear from you. 831-899-5792 or toll free 888-579-2540. Federal prosecutors have said Jefferson is under investigation for conspiring to bribe officials in Nigeria and elsewhere in West Africa in exchange for their help in securing government contracts for a small Kentucky-based technology company partly controlled by Jefferson. Jefferson has denied wrongdoing, is seeking re-election in November. And his spokeswoman, Judy Smith, said Jefferson agreed with Mr. Abu Kabar that the vice president never accepted or agreed to accept any money from the congressman. All right, what was he doing with all that cash? In his statement, Mr. Abu Bakar said that he does not wish to make any judgments about Congressman Jefferson since the matter is still ongoing, and he has full confidence in the system of administration of justice in the United States, yada, yada, yada. Well, we'll see how that one plays out. It should be interesting. And while I'm waiting for your calls to come in, and I hope you will call, we've got a few minutes to go here, and there's room for you to talk with us, I just logged on to bradblog.com, and there is an exclusive interview between Brad and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who, of course, has recently completed his research into the stolen election in 2004 in Ohio, and published a lengthy piece in Rolling Stone magazine that I think helped some people get over the hump and understand that there were substantial issues about the management of that election in Ohio. So, pardon me, Brad says that he's on vacation this week, and we don't expect to have him on the show tomorrow because he's trying to have a vacation. But the news cycle just doesn't seem to release him, and don't be surprised if he pops up on the show tomorrow afternoon. We shall see. Cynthia in Monterey is bailing me out. Thanks for your call, Cynthia.
Okay.
You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Not bad today.
Oh, that's good. Some of the world's in trouble. Can you set me straight? Lebanon is just a democracy.
Kind of.
Kind of a democracy that voted in the Hezbollah.
Well, some of the... It's complicated.
Okay, that's complicated.
Some of the members of Hezbollah have been elected to the government there. And separately, I believe, Hezbollah has, you know, a very strong presence, particularly in southern Lebanon. It's important to note
now
that Western news sources estimate that Hezbollah has fewer than 1,000 members.
Oh, okay.
Maybe in the range of 500 to 700 activists.
So that's like the 400, whatever. What are we, who are we fighting? The Al Jazeera? What are they called?
Well, wait a minute. The Iraqis?
Yeah, the Iraqi people. Who are the bad guys there?
Well, we never name the bad guys. We just call them bad guys.
Where they recruit them from the prisons.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was thinking, you know, now we know that two democracies are willing to fire on innocent people.
Hmm.
That's what I think this has been about, whether soldiers would fire on civilians. It upsets me.
Well, Cynthia, that's a very interesting thought, and I appreciate you bringing that forward.
Well, they speculated on that before.
No, but it does define our invasion of Iraq and the current Israeli incursion into Lebanon. They have committed ground troops now, and on our report last hour from Chris Tonsing at the Middle East Report, we got word that Israeli ground troops have moved forward into southern Lebanon.
A democracy. Israeli, right? Israel is democracy.
I believe so.
So they're willing to fire on civilians.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they
so that's
claim...
the experiment,
now,
right?
Let's be fair here, okay? Because one of the arguments made by Israel, which does have some merit, is that Hezbollah has positioned rockets in people's homes. And they put on additions to some homes where the rocket launchers are, and so they are camouflaged to some extent from the air. And this is why, according to Israeli authorities, they have bombed some homes and killed some civilians. Their claim is that the civilians who were killed must have known there was a rocket there and therefore are not pure and just innocent.
Right.
But that doesn't, Cynthia, explain the... pretty significant bombing of Beirut,
right.
And some of the areas that are occupied by Christians. A lot of people don't recognize that Lebanon is a multi-ethnic, multi-religious country.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
why I think it's
there's a large contingent of Maronite Christians there,
mm-hmm.
And there are Shia and Sunni Muslims there. And then there are people, I think, who are not aligned with any of the faiths I just mentioned. So it is a complex picture.
It's hard for a pacifist to believe that these armies are not mercenary. Halliburton's army is not a mercenary army. What do they call it? Blackwater.
Yeah, that's one of the
you
companies.
You know, extreme mercenary stuff. You know, soldiers of fortune, and
mm-hmm.
It's all tied up. It's very much an enterprise.
Okay, but try not to. Just merge all that stuff, you know, like put it in your blender and hit whip.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would just ask you to appreciate the complexities and the differences.
Mm-hmm. And the tribal fractions of the ancient peoples that can't stop fighting because of religious parts of their brain. You know, I sort of believe in the God part of the brain, you know, that, oh, this is for naught. you know, if evolution proves out, it's just silly. And yes, they have fired on innocent civilians. I think it's a social experiment to see whether mercenary armies are willing to fire on their own.
Okay. Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Good to talk to you. Peter B., you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Collins, and congratulations on a great and informative year.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it, too.
No small part brought by your calm direction on the SS Collins, I might add.
Well, thank you. We do what we can.
And the quality of your guests, I'm never shy of amazed at what insight they continuously bring. And I would like to comment on Sam Gardner, if I might.
Go ahead. We have 1 minute, Peter, so go right ahead.
Well, unfortunately, it's the Peter principle. According to Mr. Gardner, everybody involved in the situation is the least qualified. Olmert, our own president, and the Iranian president, Ahmadinejad.
Well, that's a very important point, that we have a bunch of novices, and Bush remains a novice even in his 5.5 years in office.
Let me make it worse. All men of action, we should be afraid, very afraid. Again, Peter, I wanted to say thank you on behalf of all of your very dedicated listeners. You do a 4-star job, and we look forward to more years of Peter B. Collins. Thank you.
All right, Peter, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Get that email in. Maybe you'll win the case of wine. Thank you for joining me today. We'll be back at you again tomorrow, same time, same stations, with the Peter B. Collins Show. Let's saddle up, Trigger.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with great news. I have a new time slot. Reality Radio can be heard every Saturday afternoon now from 4 to 5, so keep it right here, AM 540, for extraordinary progressive talk. With me, Sheila Gale, number one in reality radio. There's nothing we won't talk about. Saturdays, 4 to 5 p.m., sponsored in part by Primerica Financial Services. Call Joe and Phyllis at the Marina office for your free consultation. See you Saturday on KRXA.
Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Another night of Israeli airstrikes in Beirut and in southern Lebanon. Israel has reportedly put thousands of troops on the ground to destroy Hezbollah hideouts and establish a 20-mile buffer zone. Lebanon's defense minister says the Lebanese army would join the battle to defend the country if the Israelis mount a full-scale invasion. CBS News reporter Kristen Gillespie says it's clear they would not try to challenge Hezbollah.
Lebanon's army is staying on the side for now while Hezbollah fights with Israel. Is that the army is 30% Shiite. So any attempt by the Lebanese army to disarm Hezbollah or fight Hezbollah in any way could result in a civil war here in Lebanon.
Today, CBS News correspondent Lee Cowan traveled to the southern port city of Tyre.
Few cars were headed in our direction. Most were headed north, out of time, crammed with residents dangling white flags in hopes of being spared an airstrike. Once we entered the city, we discovered tattered posters of Hezbollah's leader looking down on us from nearly every corner. Israel's been pounding this city for days, saying it's hiding Hezbollah's rockets and missiles. But this man told us the rubble near his home was an appliance store and nothing more.
There's no Hezbollah here. There is no army of Lebanon here. There's nothing here.
Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah appeared on TV today refuting speculation that he'd been killed last night in an Israeli airstrike. He said the Hezbollah leadership is intact. In the middle of a heat wave, hundreds of thousands of people in the St. Louis area are without power.
We've already had one heat-related death, a 93-year-old woman who was living in a home that had air conditioning, but the power was out.
At St. Louis.
And her body temperature when they found her was 106 degrees.
St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay says it's a dangerous situation. The governor has declared a state of emergency in St. Louis, and he's sending National Guard troops to help.
I've never seen anything quite like this. It was 90 miles per hour winds, trees suddenly were just sent across roadways. It was an amazing storm.
Susan Gallagher of Ameron Power says they've only managed to restore about 160,000 customers so far. With the federal grand jury ending its term, it was widely expected that San Francisco Giants slugger Barry Bonds would be indicted today. It didn't happen. Prosecutors announced that perjury charges are